In other news, TV star Davina McCall.
So I had a biopsy. I found out it was indeed breast cancer. I had it taken out in a lumpectomy nearly 3 weeks ago.
Well, let's wish her a healthy recovery, but it will fuel fears or concerns over taking HRT could lean to that condition. In other news, British troops and equipment is off to Belgium. Chief of Defence Staff, Air Chief Marshal Sir Richard Knighton.
We don't know, and the Belgians don't yet know the source of those drones, but we will help them by providing our kit and capability, which has already started to deploy to help to Belgium.
Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, the BBC's Director General Tim Davey has resigned over criticism a Panorama documentary misled viewers. The Chief Executive of News, Deborah Turnus, has also stepped down after claims clips of Donald Trump were selectively edited. LBC's US correspondent Simon Marks says the White House is absolutely delighted.
Of course, they had seized on these claims regarding the Panorama documentary about President Trump and the January the 6th uprising on Capitol Hill and the way in which President Trump's soundbites were edited together to make it look as though he said to them, "We're going to march up to Capitol Hill and you are going to fight like hell," even though those two parts of the speech are very much separated by several minutes.
BBC Chairman Samir Shah is expected to apologise to a parliamentary committee later. The US Senate has taken the first step to end the longest government shutdown in history. Enough Democrats have now agreed to support Republican plans to extend federal funding. Washington Bureau Chief at The Guardian, David Smith, has told LBC it means there's light at the end of the tunnel.
They really were the first to blink in this standoff. I think they could no longer tolerate millions of people at risk of losing food aid and the millions facing travel disruption. And they won what they thought was enough of a concession on this really crucial issue in the shutdown, which is health insurance subsidies that are due to expire at the end of the year.
The deal still needs to be approved by the House of Representatives. More than 140 people have been arrested by the Metropolitan Police in a week-long crackdown on crime in London's West End. 100 additional officers from the force were deployed as part of Operation Baselife. They were targeting shop and phone theft, violence against women and girls, and other antisocial behaviour. And the latest climate talks will get underway this week as world leaders meet on the edge of the Amazon rainforest. Sir Keir Starmer is in Brazil for the COP30 climate summit, hoping to tackle global warming. Leaders from the world's biggest polluters, the US, China and India, won't be there though. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen at 96.83 after closing down 53 points on Friday. The pound buys $1.31 and a euro 13. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK this morning, brightening up later on though with some dry and bright spells, feeling mild with highs of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
The big paint event is now on at Wix. Save on Dulux standard 2.5-litre coloured emulsion was £23, now £16. Shop now. Terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after seven on Monday, November the 10th. Crisis yet again at the BBC. The boss goes, the head of news goes, and now, of course, they're going to try and rebuild trust. Can you ever trust the BBC again in the series of extraordinary scandals? One of which, by the way, just one would have been enough to bring down anyone in private organisation. Remember, we have to fund this lunacy. I've mentioned already we've had problems such as Gary Lineker and President Trump. But don't forget, of course, Hamas TV.
My name is Abdullah. I'm 13 years old. Today I'm revisiting Khan Yunis camp.
Yes, they forgot to tell us that he was happened to be a son of a Hamas official. This is one of their channels, roughly averages two apologies a week for misleading information. We'll have more on that. In other news, this is Home Secretary, then Home Secretary, I'm sorry, Yvette Cooper, speaking with you back in September about the need to end the use of hotels to house asylum seekers.
We will end the asylum hotels by the end of the Parliament. We obviously want to do that more swiftly. We do believe it can be done more swiftly.
Well, here's one way. They're now looking at giving asylum seekers £100 a week to leave those hotels. But presumably they'll just sleep on the streets, won't they? Where else are they meant to go? In a related story, more help for our veterans as we approach, of course, November 11th, that significant day. We'll be hearing about millions of pounds being made available for what are effectively veterans pop-in centres, and we'll get more details on that. Davina McCall and the bad news, sad news, and sad and bad news that she's been diagnosed with breast cancer. Would it be down to the use of HRT? That concerns raises its ugly head again. And in the world of finance,
income tax might be the big one, but reports now suggest the Chancellor is coming for your pension as well. I'm Christian May from City AM, and I'll be discussing this and the rest of the day's business news with Nick shortly.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Take your pick. Which of the scandals in the five and a bit years that the former DG, Director General of the BBC, was in place, which should have been enough to bring any one of them down in a private organisation? Gary Lineker, do you remember when he tried to assert control and he suspended Gary Lineker, only to see the rest of the sports staff decide that they wouldn't work, so he had to rather sheepishly say, I've had a lot of discussions with Gary, he knows the way forward. That was impressive. Hugh Edwards, the paedophile newsreader, now that's not Mr Davis' fault, but to continue to pay him our money and not recoup the money from the paedophile. Bob Villain, the fact he was there at Glastonbury with those chants, he was there and he did nothing. Those Hamas documentaries, coverage of trans issue, Russell Brand, Greg Wall. All right, you know exactly where I'm going, don't you? But trumped, finally, by Panorama, the supposed flagship of news and current affairs. Doctoring video in the most clumsy way possible. Well, LBC Shivani Sharma looks back at this string of scandals which finally brought down the DG and the head of news.
I have a job to do. Get a grip of the situation. The BBC deserves strong leadership. That's what I want to bring.
In 2020, stepping in as the 17th Director General or the leader of the BBC, Tim Davey was nicknamed Teflon Tim, surviving a number of scandals engulfing the corporation. But Davey lost a huge name in Gary Lineker earlier this year, who caused controversy on a number of occasions for his political commentary, and notably in 2023, Lineker was temporarily suspended by Davey. A Match of the Day aired with no pundits as colleagues walked out in solidarity with Lineker.
It's been a difficult day, and I am sorry that audiences have been affected and they haven't got the programming. We are working very hard to resolve the situation and make sure that we get output back on air.
Tim Davey also came under fire for his handling of the Hugh Edwards scandal, as perhaps the most well-known news presenter pleaded guilty to making indecent images of children.
We knew it was serious.
So why not just sack him?
Because, quite simply, the police came to us and said, look, we need to do our work in total confidence. Please keep this confidential.
Things began to unravel further for Tim Davey after the BBC aired a documentary about the war in the Middle East, failing to disclose that the narrator was the son of a Hamas official.
My name is Abdullah. I'm 13 years old. Today I'm revisiting Khan Yunis camp.
The documentary was pulled and an apology issued by Davey.
We're very sorry to the audience because we don't want to be in a position where we have flaws in the programme making.
But the heat kept coming as Davey faced another scandal at the Glastonbury Festival this year, with artist Bob Villain broadcast on stage chanting death to the IDF. And the Director General had to issue another apology.
I thought it was deeply disturbing what happened. I mean, the BBC made a very significant mistake, very significant in broadcasting that. Get it off on demand, we're not broadcasting this guy.
But it was the Telegraph's revelation in the last week that sealed Davey's fate, as the BBC was accused of selectively editing a speech made by US President Trump to make it appear he incited supporters to be violent in the lead-up to the Capitol Hill riot and fight like hell. The media secretary, Lisa Nandy, seemed to back the Director General yesterday morning on LBC.
I do have confidence
in both Samir Shah and Tim Davey that they're treating this with the utmost seriousness.
But just hours later, it was all over.
Tonight at 10, Tim Davey resigns as Director General of the BBC. He says some mistakes have been made and he must take ultimate responsibility.
The US president has taken to social media to respond, calling the scandal a terrible thing for democracy and an attempt to step on the scales of a presidential election.
Shivani Sharma reporting, what will the mood be like within the BBC now? Well, in a moment we'll speak to Richard Tate, who's now a professor, but he edited Newsnight and indeed he chaired the Editorial Standards Committee. That's in a minute or three. First, let's turn to Sir John Whittingdale, former Secretary of State for Culture, Media and Sport, or Culture Secretary, Conservative MP, joining me now. As Culture Secretary, how would you describe your dealings with the BBC, Sir John? Good morning to you.
The BBC produces thousands of hours of content every year, and mistakes are made. Now, you've listed some very serious mistakes that have been made over the last few months, but this is not something new. It's happened over years, with the result that actually previous director generals have had to resign, senior management have had to resign, and I'm sorry that Tim Davey has resigned, because I do think he's a decent man trying to do a very difficult job, but I think his position became almost impossible, not just because of the very serious failures which were revealed in the report given by Michael Prescott, but the fact that after those were drawn to the attention of the board by Michael Prescott, nothing happened. The report appeared to have been put on a shelf and ignored, and it was only after the Daily Telegraph reported it, and even then the BBC said nothing for another 4 days, and therefore I think, you know, that is a failure of the leadership of the BBC.
Trust has to be restored, Sir John. How do they go about that?
Well, I mean, it is not enough just to have two people leave their jobs and two new people to come in, because, you know, this will happen again, as has been shown over the, you know, recent months. It keeps happening. So I think there needs to be more fundamental change to reinforce the oversight of editorial standards. That may need more independent input. It may need a stronger standards committee. When I was doing the charter last time, we put impartiality into the top line of the mission of the BBC, and we gave Ofcom the power to regulate from outside. But that hasn't been enough. It hasn't achieved the changes that we wanted to see. And so we're now in a period of charter renewal once again. And so the government need to look at strengthening the editorial standards as part of the charter renewal.
Lastly, this will add fuel to the debate, the flames that we should move to some kind of subscription model as regards funding. Where are you on that, Sir John?
Well, I think it's a separate debate. The question about funding of the BBC is a very live one, because every year fewer and fewer people are choosing to pay the licence fee, and the BBC's income is being affected. So the government has already started, and when I was media minister last, we began discussing alternatives. I think that in due course, an element of subscription is almost inevitable, because I want to see public service broadcasting continue, but the licence fee is becoming increasingly outdated and I don't think can be sustained in the long term.
Sir John, enjoyed our time together. Thank you. Sir John Whittingdale, former Culture Secretary, Culture, Media, Sports Secretary, now sits on the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, 12 after 7. Listening to that is a veteran news bloke. He edited Newsnight, Channel 4 News, and editor-in-chief at ITN. Richard Tate is now Professor of Journalism at Cardiff University, but was also on the BBC Trust and chaired the Editorial Standards Committee, so well placed to discuss where the BBC goes now. Professor, thanks for coming on. Tim Davey, incompetent or unlucky? Which is it? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, anyone who's worked with Tim Davey will know he is a very good manager. However, he's made, as himself has admitted, he's made some mistakes. Mainly mistakes that he had nothing to do with directly. I think what's happened to Tim shows the strain the BBC is under as an institution and an organization, both with people inside it making the wrong decisions, making bad calls, but also an environment in which a growing number of people, unlike Sir John Whittingdale, who I think has always been a critical friend of the BBC, there's plenty of people now on the right of British politics who say defund the BBC.
Is this, you served at a high level, Professor, is this the BBC you recognise from your time there?
Not entirely, because I think Let's put it this way. I've been to quite a lot of leaving parties over the last 10 years. And I think that one of the things that happens when organizations like the BBC go through periods of very, very rapid cost reduction. I mean, they had the budget in real terms have been cut by about 30% over the last 10 years. And they haven't really, I think, adjusted what they do to that economic reality. I think they've tried to spread the money quite thinly. Quite a lot of experienced people have gone and been replaced by other people, younger people, maybe sometimes less experienced people. That happens in all organizations, of course. But I think there comes a point where if you lose some of the sort of institutional memory of the organization in terms of what's right and what's wrong and in terms of supervision of what is a very dangerous area now. Journalism is full of anti-personnel minds and you have to know where they are.
This report from the so-called whistleblower, Michael Prescott, was made known to the BBC, to Deborah Turness, to Tim Davie back in May, but also, presumably, it was known to Samir Shah. How can he stay in post?
Well, I think one of the issues of the BBC is how they do react to crises. I think, as an institution, their instinct always is to be quite cautious and let's think it through and how do we deal with this. I think in case of Samir, he's an extremely able man. He's a very experienced journalist himself. I think he's handling a very difficult situation as best he can. But these are jobs which are not easy to do at present, Nick, in the environment we've created.
Lastly, unprecedented times to lose the DG, to lose the head of news. Professor, also unprecedented to see gloating the other side of the Atlantic from a US president?
Well, I know. I looked at the White House website saying, you know, President Trump has a role in who runs the BBC.
Yeah.
I don't think we should be happy or comfortable with that. Wherever we are in the argument about the rights and wrongs of what's happened to the BBC, it is our institution. It is committed to a form of journalism which up to now we've supported, which is impartial, accurate journalism, which doesn't bow to lobbies and bullying. Whether from the White House or in the UK as a whole. And I think it's really sad that the BBC's mistakes, which they've now acknowledged, have made it more vulnerable than it should be to those sorts of criticism.
Thanks for your time today, Richard. Richard Tait was on the BBC, Trust, chaired the Editorial Standards Committee, was the boss of Newsnight, professor of journalism at Cardiff University. Thanks for your input on that. They're desperate to rebuild trust. How would they go about it? And is this that the panorama, and albeit I know that many of you just hear you've got Trump derangement syndrome, so you automatically find for anyone who goes against Trump, but this really is the biggest journalistic fail. Plus the failure to get people out of those asylum hotels. Here's Prime Minister Keir Starmer.
I understand why people want the hotels closed. I want them closed. We've said we'll get rid of them all by the end of the parliament. I'd like to bring that forward. I think it's a good challenge. I want to bring that forward.
Well, now, one idea is that they will be given these migrants £100 a week to leave the hotels, but they're not going to be able to live on £100. They will just sleep in the streets, and then I would suggest become even more aggressive and potentially dangerous, surely. We'll look at that as well after the 7:15 LBC news headlines read by Lottie Morley.
The BBC's chairman is expected to apologise for editing choices that led to the resignation of the Director General and Head of News. Politicians in the US are a step closer to ending a 40-day government shutdown. And a new colour-coded report card system will now be used in schools across England. LBC weather, cloudy with heavy rain for most of England and Wales this morning, brightening up later on with highs of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M23 going northbound to the M25 junction, and that's where a car's broken down. On the M25, there are still lengthy delays clockwise at junction 11 at Chertsey. It's following an accident, but all the lanes are now back open. Also on the M25, there are clockwise queues all the way from junction 2 at the A2 to junction 5 at the M26. That was also after an accident, and there's also queues back along the M26 as a result from junction 2A at Rootham. The A21, which is the Tunbridge bypass, remains closed southbound at the A26 junction, and that's following an accident. And on the trains, well, Gatwick Express and Southern services are still delayed to and from Victoria.
This is LBC.
Train to Brighton with the besties.
Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos.
Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up.
No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use,
interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
To be honest, work had been a slog. I'm a designer, but some nights I was chasing invoices like my full-time job. Now Sage Copilot chases my invoices for me. I just need to click a button and it's done. And I get paid 1 week faster.
Sage Copilot is built with over 40 years of experience helping real businesses like Sophia at Solver Design. That's more than artificial intelligence, that's authentic intelligence. Search Sage Copilot to learn more. Working with 21 customers, each round payments came in 7 days faster with Sage Copilot. T's and C's apply.
It's easy to forget just how crazy things have been over the past couple of years. Every day we wake up to something new. Tariffs and taxes on anything and everything. It's tempting to put your hands in your ears and go, la 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 la, I can't hear you, until it's all over. But you know what's the best response to crazy times? A plan for your money. And Quilter can help. Because let's face it, there's probably going to be some crazy times ahead too. Money needs a plan. Quilter. Pensions, investments, advice. Find out more at quilter.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
7:21. Well, you can guess what the front page headlines are. And no, well, actually, let's give it to the Daily Telegraph because they have broken the latest chapter. Davy quits BBC over bias scandal. The Daily Mail has also been in the vanguard, so there we go. BBC bosses quit in disgrace. The Daily Express, boss quits over BBC doctoring of Trump speech. I think you've probably got the idea now, haven't you? And The Sun, B, boss quits over Trump lies. By the way, we'll explore that. It's one thing for other news people, and indeed I have to sort of dive in just to cover the story, but I wouldn't dance on his grave, Tim Davies' grave, because I've met him in a number of occasions. He's just not up to it. It's simple. He's just not up to the job, plain and simple. Decent bloke, not good enough. But I wouldn't dance on his grave in the way that President Trump would. Why should he be getting so excited about someone who runs an organisation, albeit a huge organisation, thousands of miles away from the country in which he lives? Why is he getting excited about it? We might look at the Trump aspect. To the websites, well, again, here we go, with the LBC app, Trump hits out at dishonest BBC. So I think the only other website we should give you really is BBC Online. And that's BBC chair, as in chairman, to respond to MPs after Director General and News CEO resign. And this is the point that we now know that this whistleblower's report, Michael Prescott, who was looking at an editorial standard, devastating report, was made known to the head of news, gone, the DG, gone, and the chairman back in May. But the chairman stays in post. I say again, having worked for a number of private organisations in the news business, any one of those scandals, any one of them, would have brought you down, whether it was Gary Lineker taking him on and losing, Bob Villain, the paedophile newsreader whom you paid a lot of money and never got it back. Any one of them would have been enough. Let's get your voices on the radio. Jeff's in Halifax. Jeff, how do you want to start? Good morning. How do you view the BBC this morning? How do you view them?
I view the BBC as weaker than they should be. I'm a supporter of the BBC, but when these mistakes happen again and again, it doesn't seem to be just individual errors. There seems to be a problem with the staff who are appointed in the first place. Surely people who don't understand what impartiality means should be identified in the selection process and never appointed.
Rod Liddell, who writes for The Sun and was an executive in BBC Radio, he in a very senior position, he says this morning, part of the problem is they always pick from the same pool. So they all go, broadly speaking, I don't want to be dismissive, but sort of left-wing, liberal, probably Guardian-supporting journalists, and they always pick from the same crop. I wonder if that is part of the problems.
I do think it's that, partly in where they advertise roles, partly in terms of word of mouth. But also, they can't resist picking from the same pool. Even when they relocated large parts of BBC News to Manchester, they had large numbers of staff just commuting up and down from London. There was a mindset of a small group of people all talking to one another.
Jeff, you've got to start a brilliantly good idea. broadening the selection. Obviously, it's going to take a long time for a man or woman who goes in now suddenly start rising to the ranks of being CEO of news or running the place. But I think they just recruit the same all the time. Peter and Sterling, how do you view them this morning, the BBC, or view it, the BBC? It's a singular, isn't it, corporation? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I'd just like to start by saying I remember growing up watching BBC News religiously. It's part of the reason I went off to study journalism at university.
Oh, right.
So I've always
Who were the newsreaders of your day? Can you remember?
Oh, I remember people like George Alagaya and stuff. And I think I remember, is it Jill Dando?
Jill Dando, yes, sadly.
Yes, I just about remember. I was born in 91, so I just about got the end of the 90s onwards.
Right.
But, yeah, this is a bitterly disappointing end goal. I'd say it's reminiscent of the Martin Bashir scandal. With the Princess Diana.
I'd forgotten Diana, yes, of course. Yeah, lying to the princess,
What I will say, though, is, and I'm angry this erodes trust in such an important journalistic institution, and I think the journalism side of me is outraged at this, but I'm also a bit rolling my eyes and a bit wary of some of the critics who appear a bit gleeful when are looking for any excuse to dismantle or hijack the BBC. Hmm. Now, I know you mentioned that point about they're recruiting from the same pool. Left and right shouldn't come into it when you're recruiting someone, though. And I don't think they set out to do that. It just happens to be a coincidence that a lot of these people are.
I think they
impartiality,
do.
Impartiality, though, doesn't start from a point of balancing the left and the right by having equal numbers of both. It's about an idealism towards journalism, not about being left or right, or your allegiance is to journalism, to the idea of impartiality in the BBC. You don't say, well, this person's left and this person's right wing. It's impartiality.
I fear that the whole platoon of bosses at the level who are hiring, they are just roughly looking for the same sort of people, which it ends up in, and here's one of the most extraordinary lines I've read in all the coverage this morning. Mark Urban, who used to work at Newsnight, tells of where they had a meeting, and they suggested getting J.K. Rowling on as an interviewer, and someone said, she's a bit problematical. So they said, yeah, let's not go to her. How you would... to explain the process, we all sit around trying to think who would be a great guest to talk about this, that or the other. To dismiss the opportunity to get to J.K. Rowling because, quote, she's problematic, that just speaks to the mindset that is inherent within the BBC. Peter, a final word to you, sir.
I think, do you know what? I actually do agree with that. And this is what I say, is that I think that the partisan politics of the modern day has kind of poisoned the BBC, and I think they need to get back to their roots.
Enjoyed our conversation, Peter. I didn't know that's what spiked your interest, fueled your interest in journalism. Thank you for that. Let's go to other matters. We will, of course, continue the coverage of this, but we will be giving you plenty of other stories. Please don't think we're just going to sit obsessively on this. And if it's enough to make you want to leave the country and go for a drive, I don't know, in France, all the taxes, you're going to be out of luck, because motorists face being taxed for driving their electric cars in France under what's believed to be Rachel Reeves' pay-per-mile plan. I'm afraid the speculation is just going to heat up now as we get to the last couple of weeks before that budget. Motorists holidaying abroad will continue to pay the 3p tariff, even if they're not on UK roads. Let's bring into the conversation Michael Duness, who's head of transport policy at the consultancy firm Stonehaven, former head of future roads technology at the Department for Transport. Is the future, irrespective of EVs or petrol or diesel, ultimately, are we going to be looking at some kind of road pricing in this fashion, do you imagine? Good morning to you.
Morning. So it's an open question, really, because at the moment there's a big gap in how tax works across cars. If you're driving petrol or diesel, you're paying about 50p a litre or more in fuel duty, plus the VAT on top of that. For electric vehicles, there's no pay per mile cost at all. That imbalance is making people ask questions like, how are you going to go and make that a little bit fairer overall? But how you get there is really tricky. And the last time government tried to do something like this, it was a bit of a car crash, to be honest. Back in the late 2000s, I first joined the Department for Transport, I watched the team opposite me get a petition for 1.7 million signatures from members of the public. And this is before people were all on social media, so this was a lot of people telling them, please stop. So they did. And the question's never been answered. And now it seems we're going to have another try.
There's very ambitious goals as regards the introduction of EVs, electric vehicles. Are they attainable in your view?
Well, electric vehicles have got some big advantages. The engineering under the surface is really a lot more efficient than a petrol vehicle, because a petrol engine's got loads of parts. You don't need things like a gearbox, for example, if you're going to have a fully electric car done the most efficient way you can. Once the battery prices get cheap, in theory, it's primed to win. But getting there is a long journey. And for some of the things that actually make that work, like getting access to cheap charging, for example, that's still a long journey we're in the process of making. So we're not yet at the point at which it looks overwhelming. Other countries where they've done something like this, it has led to sales falling off. So it's a really big question for how this plan's going to work as to whether it's going to do the same thing here or whether it's going to see progress continuing.
lastly, how confident are you? I appreciate you're now with Stonehaven, but how confident are you that the rollout of these charging points is going to meet the necessary level of demand?
Well, for London, London's got about a third of the charge points in the UK, so it's doing quite well, but the scale it's going to have to hit is absolutely huge, and whether they're going to manage to hit that or not is an open question. And we're actually seeing in one of our recent reports, in East London in particular, they may actually be hitting a bit of a limit for the number of electric vehicles that can comfortably fit on the charger network, so they're rushing out more stuff now. What they're not doing is just helping people to get access to home charging in the way they might. If you haven't got a driveway, you've got a very different story about joining the electric revolution, and it's a lot more expensive for you. So whether councils will figure out how to go and let people charge safely at home and cheaply at home, and whether the government will help make the rules work a little better for people, again, we haven't seen it yet.
Grateful for your time. Michael Dunes, thank you. Head of Transport Policy at the consultancy firm Stonehaven. You were Head of Future Roads Technology at the Department for Transport, and thanks for sharing some of the insight from that. Just a quick one to social media. Failed journalist, client broadcaster and sacked ex-Sun reporter Nick Ferrari talking about journalistic integrity is a weird thing to wake up to this morning. How dare you? I wasn't sacked. I chose to leave the Sun. The rest is absolutely true. Coming up after the news.
I spoke to my Belgian opposite number in the week and he asked if we would be prepared to support them, and the Defence Secretary and I agreed at the end of last week that we would deploy our people, our equipment to Belgium to help them.
Yeah, it's getting a bit worrying out there, isn't it? UK staff and kit, military staff and kit going over to Belgium, possible drones, plus... That's the succession theme, and later in the show you'll hear from the man who was probably one of Rupert Murdoch's most trusted lieutenants of all time, Les Hinton, as he launches his debut thriller. He's joining me later in the show. 7.30, Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Newstime, Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump has welcomed the resignation of two of the most senior bosses at the BBC. Director General Tim Davie and Chief Executive of News Deborah Turnis have stepped down. The organisation is facing criticism over the way a speech from the US president was edited in a Panorama documentary. A deal aimed at ending the government shutdown in the US has passed the Senate. It's the first sign of progress after a 40-day deadlock that's affected domestic flights and food benefits for people on low incomes. And a new colour-coded report card system will now be used in schools across England. It's the most significant reform from Ofsted in decades and will replace single word judgments. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK this morning, brightening up later on with highs of 15 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
If I want to nip 50 yards down the road in my electric car to go and buy some bacon, I'm going to go and do it. I shouldn't be charged for the privilege of it because I'm already paying taxes for the roads that are being used, and I'm already paying a fortune in subsidies that the government have charged on my electricity bill to charge the damn thing. Get out of my way, leave me alone, I'm coming through.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Experience. It's knowing the difference between a good deal and, well, a great deal. Right now, get 3 months free when you take out Saga Health Insurance. You get 24/7 GP access whenever you want it, and the freedom to choose your preferred private hospital with your own room should you need it. Search Saga Health Insurance for a quote today. New customers starting a policy before the 27th of November. Pay by monthly direct debit for the first year. Terms and conditions apply. Over 50s only.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever,
but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction.
We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Nick Ferrari at Breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
just coming up on 7:34, back to the BBC in crisis in a moment or two. Let's go to the world of business now, joined by Christian May, who's editor-in-chief at City AM. And let's go to City AM online. A story about a clampdown on what's called salary sacrifice. Break that down for us, if you would, Christian. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, another Monday, another week of speculation, I'm afraid, as to what the Chancellor may or may not do in a couple of weeks. The speculation is, how can I put it, increasingly well-informed. Number 10 and the Treasury just simply refusing to rule out anything that's put to them these days. And indeed, some remarks from unnamed Number 10 insiders over the weekend saying, yeah, it's pretty obvious that we're going to do all this. The latest, after a week of controversy over a potential rise to income tax, is that alongside that, put it this way, if you were on, I don't know, 80 grand a year and you realised that at the budget, the Chancellor's tax changes are going to take about £1,000 off you, you might think, well, in that case, I'll just up my salary sacrifice scheme. I'll put more of my salary into a pension via my employer and shield myself from some of the national insurance contributions on that. Very common, encouraged system up to this point. But now we understand that the Chancellor is, in fact, saying, hold your horses. You know, you can't outsmart me just like that. I think the Chancellor is now looking at, we understand from reports over the weekend, capping the amount that any employee can put into a salary sacrifice scheme in form of pension, and indeed taking out more contributions from the employer as well. So quite a bold move that would effectively discourage people from saving for their pensions, just at the same time as you're taking more money off them directly in the form of taxation. So that one's going to have a few people moaning, I'm sure. We also learn over the weekend that the Chancellor is poised to increase the rate of tax on dividends, people who take an income from the ownership of shares or indeed from the ownership of shares in their own company. Dividend tax is charged at the higher and additional rate, pretty much in line with income tax as it stands, but at the basic rate. So if you're a basic rate taxpayer, you also make some side hustle money from dividends. You're currently taxed at about 9% on that. Talk that the Chancellor might dramatically increase that as well. So there we go. Starting the week with a few more potential tax rises that I'm sure we'll chew over again in the coming days.
And that's not the only challenge in the workplace or the workforce. Talk to us about AI, Christian.
Well, we do try to keep a close eye on the impact of artificial intelligence in the labour market. It's quite hard to pin down exact motivations for getting rid of jobs. It's probably going to be over time easier to look back at the kind of jobs that have stopped being created in the first place. We know that in recent weeks, Amazon has said that they're going to get rid of about 15,000 corporate roles. And the chief there has pretty much said that is because of the transformative technology of AI. We also know that across professional services, companies like PwC, quite dramatically reducing the amount of graduates that they're taking on as they look to the sorts of things that AI can deliver for them. Now we've got latest research out this morning from the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development, the main professional body for the HR industry, that says one in six employers now expect artificial intelligence to reduce the size of their workforce over the next year. Now, is that simply because AI is obvious and sensible thing to reach for? Or is it because actually at a time when employment costs are going up and business and consumer confidence is struggling, there's uncertainty around the budget, employers are actually looking for anything they can to try and ease the burden? I suspect it's a little bit of both, but it is something which is happening. It can't be ignored. And I'm sure that it's something that graduates in particular are going to want to be mindful of when they consider their future careers.
Who's sending out a call for Bob the Builder?
Well, that would be the UK government. The government has a very ambitious plan to build 1.5 million homes by the end of this parliament. And there aren't many people who think they're going to meet that target. The people involved in house building, in the planning system and in construction in particular are saying, I just don't see how this is going to happen. The latest voice in that comes from a report by the Construction Plant Hire Association. You can imagine that group behind the provision of machinery across building sites across the country have said that they're just not going to be able to do this. Every year, the group has said this morning, the year-on-year figure is showing a reversal in the number of people working in the construction sector. So actually, they're going backwards in terms of the number of people building these houses, and not just houses, but critical national large infrastructure projects as well. This comes after all sorts of industry groups have pointed out that the construction sector is in real trouble. In fact, the construction sector, if you isolate it from the rest of the economy, is basically in recession. The number of jobs are being cut, the number of construction starts is really struggling. Matter of fact, if you look at the number of planning applications being put in this to councils across the country, if you want to hit 1.5 million homes, you need to see about 40,000 planning applications for new homes submitted and approved each month. Actually, the average is about 18,000 at a moment. So whether it's to do with construction costs, regulation, lack of builders in the workforce, this ambitious home building target is looking pretty unlikely at the moment.
Christian Mayer's editor-in-chief at City AM. Talk around the same time tomorrow. Christian, thank you. 7:39. As we're talking about the Chancellor, and of course, what have we got? A couple of weeks, there'll still be all these speculation and speculative stories and speculation. John's in Wembley. John, you want to have a word on the Chancellor? What is your idea? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. I'm a first-time caller.
Good to have you on.
It's very obvious to me that we have to come up with a radical solution to the black hole. Mm. And I put this forward to the Chancellor through my MP. I've not heard anything back. And it really wants LBC to get behind this, to push things
forward.
What
is your idea?
All we need to do is put a 1% tax on all internet transactions. Now, I'm sure that can be implemented, and it would bring in a lot of money from right across the whole sections of the community. It wouldn't be just the old chestnuts that are being taxed higher and higher and higher. And it's quite straightforward. I can't understand why they haven't done it so far.
Who would be responsible?
Totally separate the VAT.
Who would be responsible?
HMRC.
Right. So, hang on. If I buy something from an overseas company, how is the British government going to get the money?
Well, if you don't do overseas companies, then you stick to the UK.
The joy of internet shopping is, as so many people tell me, is that they can buy goods from just about anywhere they choose. So, for the purpose of debate, somebody buys something from the United States of America, how are we going to get that 1% levy there?
Customs and excise, then. Get customs and excise to implement it. They already have tax.
I don't understand Okay, I buy a suit from the United States of America for $500 or £500. How is HMRC going to get involved?
It's customs and excise. Separate 1% on the transaction.
I bought myself a $500 suit. How are they going to find out?
They're managing to charge you for your customs duty of it coming in.
Let's see it's an idea, John. It's just the practicality. At least what you're trying to make sure that people don't get punished in the workplace through pensions or taxation or whatever and not upping VAT. But will it work? Let's see what others make of it. John, thank you for your input on that. We will come back to, of course, if you have ideas, do let me know on that. But we will come back to our conversation about the BBC in just a moment. But to other matters, and I sense, but for the BBC, the magnitude of that story, this will be rather nearer the front pages. The news that British troops and equipment will be sent to Belgium following a series of drone incursions thought to have been carried out by Russia. His Chief of the Defence Staff, Air Chief Marshal Sir Richard Knighton, telling the BBC yesterday how the UK has been in support of Belgium.
I spoke to my Belgian opposite number in the week, and he asked if we would be prepared to support them, and the Defence Secretary and I agreed at the end of last week that we would deploy our people, our equipment to Belgium to help them. It is important to be clear, though, that we don't know, and the Belgians don't yet know the source of those drones, but we will help them by providing our kit and capability, which has already started to deploy to help to Belgium.
Let's turn to Dominic Nicholls, who's Associate Editor for Defence at The Telegraph. That's very much the title to be with at the moment, isn't it? Also hosts Ukraine, the latest podcast, and served more than 20 years in the British Army, including tours of Afghanistan, and joins me now. Dominic, what makes us think it's the Russians? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I hate to think you're having to lower yourself to a $500 suit, but anyway, never mind. Good to speak to you. Why do we think it's the Russians? Well, I mean, you know, if it looks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it probably is something sort of aquatic. I mean, it's the most obvious culprit. I mean, this is serious stuff, flying these drones over civil airports, also last night over nuclear facilities and elsewhere. I mean, yes, the business model has been broken. So any you know, young tyke with a drone can think they can get up to merry hell here. But actually, it is very serious stuff. And when you're at that level, it's really only on a state level. Why Belgium? Well, you know, it's a major European nation, major European airport. It hosts NATO, the headquarters of NATO, the military and the political side. And of course, it's got this nuclear facility there. And most importantly, it's sitting on $200 billion worth, or euros worth, sorry, of frozen Russian assets. So all these pointers are that it's Russia behind this. I think that's the most plausible explanation. Actually, it almost doesn't matter. That has to go on in the background to work out who it is. The most pressing thing is to stop these things happening. Belgium isn't the first place in Europe in the last few weeks we've seen this going on. Then there doesn't seem to be a credible response to actually stopping these things happening. There's lots of plans to do things after the event and investigations, but these things are still happening on a fairly weekly basis.
Dominic, you're right. Sightings in Germany, Denmark, Norway, Sweden, and now Belgium. What's the sort of kit that the UK can send?
Well, it's thought it's going to come from the Royal Air Force, so they will love the fact you've called them troops. It'll come from their force protection wing. Oops. And it's thought to be radio frequency interference. So basically snapping that electronic link between the person on the ground or wherever they are controlling the drone and the radio frequency up to the actual device itself. The kind of drones you see today in Ukraine, they're called first person view drones, and the fiber optic cable drones, they're actually connected. There's a physical hardwired connection to the machine. It's not thought that those are the things that are flying here. They are almost impossible to jam because there's a physical link between the aircraft and the person on the ground. These are thought to be the sort of hobbyist drones, the remote control drones that you'll see buzzing around parks and what have you. And so they can be fairly easily interfered with, that radio frequency signal. So if you blast enough energy there into the enough radio energy into the air, you will disrupt that signal and the drone will fall down.
Dominic, I must leave it there, only for time reasons. Look after yourself, sport. Dominic Nichols, Associate Editor for Defence at The Telegraph, and hosts Ukraine, the latest podcast, more than 20 years operational service in the British Army. Dominic, thank you for that. John in Wembley, if you're listening and your idea, adding that to internet tax, a lot of support. Jay, Mike, Andrew, all saying that they think it's a great idea. So, John, perhaps you are on something. Watch this space. Maybe you've given them ideas, and they're saying that levying the point I challenged you over actually would be pretty simple for customs and excise. So maybe you are onto something, John. A lot of people agreeing with you, so thanks for your input on that. Coming up later in the show, you might have heard this on the weekend from TV star Davina McCall.
So I had a biopsy. I found out it was indeed breast cancer. I had it taken out in a lumpectomy nearly 3 weeks ago.
Well, initially, of course, we send our best wishes for a full recovery, but also this will fuel the fears that if you use HRT, are you in some way making yourself vulnerable or exposing yourself more? We'll give you more on that in the next hour. It's 7:46 LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
The BBC's Director General Tim Davie has resigned over criticism a Panorama documentary misled viewers. The US Senate has taken the first step to end the longest government shutdown in history. And more than 140 people have been arrested by the Metropolitan Police in a week-long crackdown on crime in London's West End. LBC weather, cloudy with heavy rain for most of England and Wales this morning, brightening up later with highs of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise from junction 10 at the A3 to 11 at Chertsey. It's following an accident and one lane is closed. Also, the delays continue on the M25 clockwise from junction 2 at the A2 to junction 4 at Orpington. On the Tunbridge bypass, the A21 southbound, only one lane's open right near to the A26 junction, and that's because of an accident. The A13's closed westbound at the Pitsey flyover following an accident. And there are lengthy queues on the approach. On the underground, no Piccadilly line between Rayners Lane and Uxbridge, and Gatwick Express and Southern trains remain delayed to and from Victoria.
This is LBC.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
The £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11 a.m. Not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to recharge yourself and your phone. To stretch out. Sit back, and when you hear All Change Please, you'll know you already have. Go with your flow with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Hillary's best ever Black Friday sale is now on, and it doesn't get any better than this. With an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind, with measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Lidl's deluxe mince pies are here. They're buttery, crumbly, Good Housekeeping Institute taste approved and only £1.99 with Lidl Plus. Is there anything more Christmassy? Maybe if they were made in the North Pole? Lidl. More to value. 18 plus GB only. While stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LPTV. Offer ends 19th of 11th, 2025.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 8 on November the 10th, so you've still got all today to go out and buy your poppy. Indeed, if you haven't, if you've already bought one, why don't you buy another one? Because there couldn't be a more appropriate time to remember. And of course, if you were able to listen to or watch the service yesterday at the Cenotaph, we need to do all we can to remember those who didn't come back and look after those who did and their loved ones. So go and make sure you avail yourself. You've got all day and tomorrow as well. And I have this conversation as we talk about a veteran strategy that will be outlined by the government today with some fairly chunky funding behind it. Let's get more from Labour MP and Minister for Veterans and People, Louise Sandhare-Jones. Good to have you on, sir. What is it you and your colleagues are announcing today? Good morning to you.
Good morning. So, yeah, the veterans strategy, this is a hugely important milestone as part of our commitment to renew our contract with those who serve and have served. So this veterans strategy is based on three pillars, and it's fundamentally about resetting the narrative about how we talk about our veterans. So I'm a veteran myself. I served in the army, and I know I'm a much better person for having served. The skills and values that you learn, and it's about celebrating. That's our first pillar. The amazing things that people are doing in our armed forces. Second pillar is about contributing. So many people are better off for having served. They leave the armed forces with a wealth of skills and experience, and they can make a huge contribution to our industries and our wider communities. It's about making sure that we are making the most of our veterans' skills and experience. And then, of course, the third pillar, very importantly, is support. Some veterans do need a bit of extra help when they leave the services. So it's about making sure that we do our duty by them and give them the support that they need. And as part of that, we've obviously announced £27 million worth of funding for the first tranche of applications for Valour. Valour is a great programme that we're doing. So what Valour will be is a network of hubs across the UK, physical locations where veterans can go and seek help. And one thing that I hear all the time from veterans is, I've got this problem, I'm not sure where to go, where can I go to get support? And what Valour is about addressing that. So it'll be a physical location where somebody can go in, have a cup of tea, talk about the issues that they're facing, and be signposted to all the support that is out there to help them.
How many, do we call them Valour centres, Minister? How many Valour centres is it hoped there will be able to be provided nationwide?
So I want a good geographical spread across the country, particularly in areas where we have high representation of veterans. Centres that wish to be part of the Valour network can apply for up to £1 million of funding, sort of between 500,000 and a million. pounds. And it's what's super important is that there is this physical location across the UK where veterans can go and ask the questions and get the answers that they need.
But how many will there be?
So this, we haven't set a particular number because this is about having the applications in. Of course, we're going to have a standardised output that we want these centres to have so that we know that veterans are getting what they need. But each centre, we want to make sure that we recognise the local nuances, work with the fantastic work that charities are already doing across the country.
We must have an idea, though, this £27 million. I mean, how much does each one cost per annum? What is the setup costs?
So again, it's going to be hugely dependent on the type of charity or CIC that asks for funding. So some places may be asking for a bit less money. For example, they may already have their own funding streams that pay for the location, for instance, and they may be asking for some help with funding caseworkers. This funding is set to be over 3 years. They can ask for a maximum of £1 million, but they can really ask for any amount up to that. It's really dependent on what they have already, what they're able to offer, and what they need to be able to kind of cover up the gap to make up for what we want a Valour recognised centre, the kind of service we want them to provide.
And Minister, who will staff these centres?
So again, it's dependent on the charity or the CIC that gets involved. So for example, I know my local organisation has a mixture of caseworkers that come from a variety of different specialisms. So there are addiction support counsellors, for example, as well as people who are working on OpNova. And also those that are supporting OpFortitude. And this is something I really want to get across, Nick, and I wonder if you could help me with this, is OpFortitude, which is our helpline for any veteran that is facing sleeping on the streets tonight, or if you know a veteran that's sleeping on the streets tonight, call this number and the government will make sure that we find accommodation for them. And the number is, Nick, and this challenge for everybody to remember this number, 0800 952 0774. If you're a veteran facing sleeping on the streets tonight, call that number and we will find accommodation for you.
Don't worry, I will read it again at the end of the interview. I'll give you one last time, but I will give you when I conclude with the minister. It's 0800 952 0774. Do you have an idea roughly how many veterans sleep rough on our streets each night as we approach Christmas, Minister?
So those numbers are really hard to know. And of course, one veteran on the streets is one veteran too many. We have obviously the number
of referrals. But what sort of number do you think we might be talking of here?
So I think across the rough sleeping population, veterans certainly don't make up any more than we would expect to see. And I want to get the number down to zero. And that's
But what do you think the number is, Minister?
So we know with OpFortitude that we see referrals in the tens every week. And we know that we've helped over 1,000 people access housing through OpFortitude. And then we also know that those that are at risk of homelessness is a bigger number. And of course, those stats are just very difficult to track. But actually, I really want to take this back to Valour, because one of the really key things that Valour
I don't think you know the figure, because I have asked you three times. And I would have thought if you want to talk about the importance of Operation Fortitude, it might have been an idea to look at the number, mightn't it, Minister?
No, so I think it's important to recognise that people who are sleeping on the streets, so the way we can collect that data, so it's really important to understand how we can collect the data.
It's 3,700, believed to be.
And, as we know, that is far too many people that are sleeping on the streets that are veterans.
That's the size of the challenge you and your colleagues are facing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we've got Valour and we've got OpFortitude, which is to make sure that we can get that number down to zero.
OK, I've got one veteran asking, can you ask the Minister, will veterans need to register for the new Veterans Digital ID, asks Will. Will that be necessary to get these services, Minister?
No, not at all. So the Veterans Digital Card is just a digital version of the Veterans Physical Card, which every veteran is entitled to have. I have one myself. I don't really carry physical cards around these days, so having it on my phone is very useful. It means that I can show that I'm a veteran when I want to.
OK. While I have the Benview on the line, a couple of other matters. You've probably seen the headlines. The RAF to defend Belgium from what could be Russian drones that have also been sighted, it is believed, in Germany, Denmark, Norway and Sweden. An update on that, Minister?
Yeah, so when our NATO allies call for aid, Britain steps up. So we have sent specialists from the RAF, who are counter-drone specialists, to Belgium to make sure that we are tackling this serious threat.
All right. A view on the BBC. We now know, of course, that the Director General has gone, the head of news or CEO of news has gone. They all knew about this report in May. We're speaking in the middle of November, as did the chairman. Shouldn't Samir Shah go as well?
So I think that's a matter for them. It's not for a government minister to opine over that kind of thing. What I would say is it's been clear that there have been editorial failings at the BBC that don't meet the high standards that the public have a right to expect. And of course, I think it's also very fair to say that the BBC is one of our hugely important national institutions. It is a lot of people have a lot of trust in the BBC. They access its very broad range of news output every day, from local matters to national and international matters. There's a huge amount of respect and trust for the BBC. But it is clear in this instance that there were some editorial failings.
What level of trust do you have in it, Minister?
I have a very high level of trust. So I get a lot of my news from the BBC. I see a broad range of views represented. You know, one thing I definitely feel as a constituency MP, I speak to many people who can have very, very different views on a broad range of opinion. It's absolutely important that the BBC reflects that broad range of views. And so when I see things that I agree with and when I don't agree with, I think that's probably fair. And they certainly do a hugely fantastic job at reporting local news in particular.
And lastly, can you give us an update on the progress of Operation Pianora?
Yeah, so Pianora is the operation by the Wiltshire Police, which is investigating the incredibly troubling allegations.
Well, it's believed it could be the biggest ever, I read, anyway. It's feared.
Yes, and certainly in the veterans networks that I'm part of, particularly the women's veterans networks that I'm a part of, it's certainly been a huge issue. I don't think there's a veteran out there that hasn't been thinking back to their own experiences and wondering what was right and what wasn't right. So I would urge anybody who has questions over what they went through in their medicals as a recruit to please get in touch with the police with those stories.
Do we know, lastly, when any initial findings might be reported? Is there going to be a preliminary review?
So it's Wiltshire Police that are leading on that. So that's for them to set out any timelines. But I can only repeat that anybody who believes that they have suffered these to get in touch.
OK, grateful for your time. Thank you, Minister for Veterans and People, talking about this £27 million funding of these Valour centres. Watch this space as and when they become available. You're listening to LBC. Coming up after the news, Reform UK have long campaigned for the licence fee to be scrapped. The party leader, Nigel Farage, will join us after the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the BBC chairman will speak to MPs later after two of the organisation's most senior bosses stepped down. Director General Tim Davey and Chief Executive of News Deborah Turnus quit over criticism about Panorama's editing choices. Journalists there are accused of conflating two parts of Donald Trump's speech on the night of the Capitol riots. Former Culture Secretary Sir John Whittingdale has told LBC fundamental change is needed.
It is not enough just to have two people leave their jobs and two new people to come in, because, you know, this will happen again, as has been shown over the recent months. It keeps happening. So I think there needs to be more fundamental change to reinforce the oversight of editorial standards. That may need more independent input. It may need a stronger standards committee.
President Trump has welcomed the news on Truth Social. The US Senate has taken the first major step towards ending America's longest ever government shutdown. Enough Democrats have now agreed to support Republican plans to extend federal funding. The 40-day pause has disrupted air travel and threatened food assistance for millions of Americans. World leaders will begin talks aimed at limiting global warming as COP30 begins in Brazil. Every nation is being asked to publish its emissions cutting plans, but as of yesterday, more than a third still haven't. The US is being urged to do more after Donald Trump ditched some major green policies when he returned to the White House. But Zipporah Berman, founder of the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty, says the trend is only going one way.
This year on the planet, one in five cars that are sold will be electric. Renewable energy is now cheaper at scale in every major jurisdiction in the world. We're actually living a transition.
Veterans across the UK are going to be offered support with health, housing and employment at local centres. £27 million of government funding is available, with extra help for servicemen and women at risk of homelessness. And from today, a new colour-coded report card system will be used in schools across England. Ofsted will replace single-word assessments with more detailed comments across areas, including quality of education, behaviour and leadership. In the city, the FTSE 100 is reopening at 96.83 after closing down 53 points on Friday. The pound buys $1.31 and €1.13. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK this morning, brightening up later on with some dry and bright spells, feeling mild with highs of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
If I need an eye test, I don't go to Specsavers.
One thing you won't see at Specsavers is me.
Do I go?
Yes!
I mean, no. Me, I don't go to Specsavers. Nor you, eh, Spike?
Should have gone to Specsavers. Nah.
Hi, Specsavers. Here for your eye test.
They come to me instead.
Come in. Kettle's on.
Oh, thank you.
If you can't go to Specsavers unaccompanied, we could come to you. See if you're eligible at specsavers.co.uk/home visits.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Morning, 3 minutes after eight on Monday, November the 10th. We'll come back to the biggest story. The BBC bosses who've quit in disgrace, the chairman who's still there, and their desperate attempts to try and rebuild trust. And I'll ask you, how would you go about the latter? In other news, then Home Secretary Yvette Cooper speaking with me in September about the need to end the use of hotels to house asylum seekers.
We will end the asylum hotels by the end of the Parliament. We obviously want to do that more swiftly. We do believe it can be done more swiftly.
One way is that migrants will be offered £100 a week to move out of the hotels. But where are they going to sleep? They're not going to be able to live off £100 a week, are they? Accommodation. Won't they just then get even more distressed and possibly, not all, possibly some of them, lead to more crime? We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander speaking previously about the problems that potholes cause.
It's no laughing matter. If you hit a pothole, you end up taking your car to the garage. It costs you hundreds of pounds to get it sorted. And so it's imperative that this new Labour government takes action to fix this.
Indeed, no laughing matter. But where's the local authority in the country where they've been told the next potholes will be filled in 103 years' time? That's right, 103 years. Yeah, how dare they suggest this country's bust, bankrupt and broken? What a ridiculous suggestion. And arguably one of the men who knew Rupert Murdoch the best, his former key executive Les Hinton has turned thriller writer. He'll be joining me later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let's look at the political aspect of this collapse for the BBC, beset by yet more headlines. I don't need to go through all the latest scandals, but the latest one, of course, the panorama, the doctoring of that video. Now, Reform UK has long campaigned to scrap the licence fee. We're joined now by party leader Nigel Farage. Thank you for coming on, Mr. Farage. Your take on events last night and through this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I did speak to Donald Trump on Friday, and to say that he was angry would be an understatement. As he said, I thought you guys were allies, and this was a state broadcaster. Absolutely appalling, but it's just the latest of a long list of political biases that we see running throughout the BBC. I've watched it for decades, whether it was their coverage of the European Union, their coverage of immigration, their coverage of climate change, their swallowing hook, line and sinker Hamas propaganda coming out of Gaza, and the sort of DEI agenda, the woke agenda, runs through not just news, but every cultural programme as well. And so you have to conclude that the BBC has been not just run, but staffed by the wrong people for way, way too long.
They're talking about the need to rebuild trust. Is it past the point of no return?
I suppose if I was being kind to them, I could say they're in the last chance saloon. But you would need to appoint a new director general who came in to completely change the culture of the BBC. And frankly, given the thousands of people working in that building, given the very narrow section of society that they come from, I think it's going to be very difficult. I mean, bear in mind, last year, 500,000 people stopped paying licence fee. The year before that, 500,000 people stop paying the licence fee. And unless they turn that around very quickly, it will go into a state of complete collapse.
He took on Gary Lineker and he lost. He was at Glastonbury where Bob Villain started those vile chants. He's also, of course, paid money to a paedophile newsreader. Not, he didn't know he was a paedophile, but never got the cash back from Hugh Edwards. Is Tim Davey incompetent or unlucky?
Well, perhaps a bit of both. Perhaps a bit of both. But my fear is what comes after Tim Davey, because it will be the government, of course, that effectively appoints who the next boss of the BBC is. Knowing this Labour government, we'll probably get somebody even worse. So I think the campaign to get rid of the licence fee in its current form, to have a BBC that is genuinely slimmed down. Look, it doesn't need to do entertainment or sport or all these things. We're living in a different media landscape where we pay according to what we want to watch. And so the current model, wholly unsustainable, but I would fear that Labour will appoint somebody that's even worse.
So the head of news, or news CEO, knew about this in May. The director-general knew this about this in May. The chairman knew about this in May, but Samir Shah is still in post. Should he be?
Well, he's in post for now, but, I mean, wait until Parliament debates this during the week, and I'd be very, very surprised if he was still there at the end of it.
What do you think has been Tim Davies' gravest crime?
Just not being able to get a grip of the BBC, not being able to re-establish any sense of trust with growing number of the public, that they look at everything from a centre-left, metropolitan, DEI-driven agenda.
You mentioned your conversation with President Trump on Friday. Can you elaborate? Can you tell us a little bit more of what he said?
Well, I just, you know, he was absolutely enraged. Enraged that the BBC had done this to him. I mean, you can scarcely believe it. I mean, he has been a critic of the BBC in the past, I mean, that is true, but he really thought this was the final straw. And frankly, you know, everyone talks about Russia meddling in elections. We hear that year after year after year. Well, what about the BBC? Their attempt to interfere in a presidential election just weeks before the vote. That's the point that really stuck in the craw.
The president has subsequently posted on social media about the two bosses going almost in a gleeful pose. Should he be dancing on their graves, Mr. Farage?
Look, you know, you have deeply offended, the BBC have deeply offended the leader of the free world, an absolutely crucial ally, whether you like Trump or not, a crucial ally to this country, without whom we are effectively defenceless. I'm not surprised he's pleased.
Before I let you go, last couple of matters. I note that a fairly big business backer has got the chequebook out and sent you some money. Mr. Farage, can you give my listeners more details on this donation?
In particular, you're referring to Lord Bamford here, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah, well, JCB, obviously one of the great British industrial successes, you know, huge success in this country, in India, in America as well. Lord Bamford and his family have always supported the Conservative Party very generously over many, many years. But he's decided to give us some money as well, which we're very pleased with. In particular, he likes the fact that I'm very, very pro small business. And they are, you know, Nick, the most ignored part of the whole of this country. 5.7 million small businesses run by men and women, some of them acting as sole traders, some of them directors of their own limited companies, and they have just been hit again and again and again by business. Hit on tax, particularly corporation tax, which stops them reinvesting. Hit with IR35 rules, which makes self-employment so, so difficult. Many people at the end just give up, retire early. And also, they'd all expected with Brexit for the rules and regulations in their industries to get easier. Do you know what? In most sectors, it's worse now than it was at the time of the Brexit vote. And we are a party that's going to stand up for small business. I've run small businesses myself for over 30 years. And frankly, all that Labour and Tory do, they listen to the giant multinationals. They're the ones that take them out for dinner. And these millions of people trying their hardest, taking risks, running their own things, have no one to speak for them. So we're going to launch today Small Business for Reform, and we intend to get tens of thousands of businesses to join up with us so we can form a strong manifesto for the next election.
The donation is £200,000, it's been reported. Is that the correct sum, Mr Farage?
That is the correct sum.
All right. Yeah. Lastly, a reporter last week went to Kent, a county I know has a close place in your heart.
Mm.
What is going wrong with the reform running of Kent? I've got it that more than 15% of your councillors have stood down and some are forming a sort of rival faction. Mr Farage, if you can't control Kent, how can you control the country?
Well, political parties always have choices. You know, you have people within who don't want to play by the rules, want to do their own thing, don't keep confidences, and so you have to decide, don't you? Do you keep individuals like this inside the tent, or do you get rid of them and carry on as a more unified unit? And we gave these people every opportunity. They weren't straight with us. They weren't honest with us. So we're better off without them. Simple as that.
But it's not a good look, is it, lastly, Mr Farage? Nothing.
Oh,
it's not rosy in the Garden of England in Kent, is it, Mr Farage? With all these councillors quitting.
Well, it's much rosier now than it was 2 weeks ago when we had them inside the tent. So, as I say, you have a problem, you deal with it, you move on.
All right, grateful for your time, Nigel Farage. Thank you. Reform UK leader talking about, of course, Donald Trump's involvement in the BBC story and the funds that would come. And he's holding a press conference about that later. And let's get back into what's happening now at the BBC. Danny Cohen was director of BBC Television, now president of Access Entertainment. Right, you have prowled the corridors of power within the BBC. What will be going on there this morning, do you imagine? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, I think there'll be a sense of shock, a sense of upheaval. But I think what really is important is what the BBC does now, as you rightly asked just now. It's actually an opportunity for the BBC now to change, to recognise what's gone wrong and see if they could make themselves more fit for purpose for the future. My concern actually is that there'll almost be too much focus on the Dr. Trump edit and the cover-up of that, when what Mr. Prescott report reveals is a much wider problem of systemic bias, which covers not only the American election, but Israel and the Hamas war, gender issues and so on.
How confident are you that it wants to change, Danny?
I just don't know at this point. I mean, you can see already this morning people have gone on the attack and said that, you know, it's a conspiracy, a political conspiracy to bring down the leaders. I think that really misses the point. And if the BBC goes down that route, it's actually going to cause great risk to its future, because the very best thing the BBC can do now is look at what's gone wrong, take it seriously and work out how it's going to change. There was an interesting comment last night from Baroness Stowell. And she said the BBC continues to be concerned that if it admits it's got a problem, it will lose its credibility. But actually, it's losing its credibility because it won't admit it's got a problem. And I think that's right at the heart of it. And if it can really get to grips with that, then the BBC can have a healthy future.
Bob Villain at Glastonbury, Hamas coverage, the Hamas documentary, Hugh Edwards saga, Greg Wallace, Gary Lineker, President Trump. Is this the BBC that you were director of TV with?
I hope not. And in particular on those, you know, I think the BBC does owe the Jewish community an apology this morning. What the Prescott report reveals is that BBC executives knew, Tim Davey, Deborah Turnus and others, that there was a systemic problem of bias at BBC Arabic. They had the evidence prepared by an internal BBC report. But they kept saying in public, in Parliament, in private to members of the Jewish community, it was just individual errors by individuals and there was no systemic issue. We now know that they had the evidence that wasn't the case, and that is pure gaslighting. And for that, the BBC owes the Jewish community a big apology.
Final question, Danny, something I put to Nigel Farage. As you rightly point out, the head of news knew back in May, as did the DG, as did the chairman, Samir Shah. How does he stay in post?
Yeah, I think his position is very compromised. I'm presuming he's there to hold the fort because there's, you know, such big management upheaval. But it is really very shocking that they knew about this 6 months ago and did nothing. I understand Ms. Turner's defended the clip in that meeting, according to the Prescott report, and the others did nothing. So I think that shows you what, you know, me and some others have been saying over recent years. The BBC is much more concerned with its reputation than solving its problems. And that's really what's got to change.
Grateful for your time today. Danny Cohen, by the way, Danny has a piece in today's Daily Telegraph, which I have to say really does seem to be in the vanguard of newspapers at the moment, doesn't it? Former director of BBC TV and now president of Access Entertainment. Coming up after the news, as it is revealed, Davina McCall has developed breast cancer. The possible link with taking HRT, we'll have more on that. It's 17 after 8 now. LBC headlines then. Lottie Morley.
The BBC chairman will speak to MPs after two of the organisation's most senior bosses step down. The US Senate has taken the first major step towards ending America's longest ever government shutdown. World leaders will begin talks aimed at limiting global warming at COP30 in Brazil. LBC weather, cloudy with heavy rain for most of England and Wales, brightening up later on with highs of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise from junction 8 at Reigate to 11 at Chertsey. It's following an accident where one lane is closed. A car also broke down in the queue, which has added to those delays. Anti-clockwise is open but slow from junction 14 at Heathrow following another accident and also because of onlookers. Traffic was being held on the A2 westbound at Dartford Heath after a separate accident, but that's now reopened, but there were still huge delays back past the M25. In Tunbridge on the A21 southbound, it's slow to the A26, and that's following an accident that happened earlier. And very busy on the North Circular Road eastbound at Brent Cross because a van has broken down.
This is LBC.
Build your own package with Chewy. Let's go. City break or a beach escape. Lovely. Fly from your local airport.
Taxi's here.
Handy. Any day of the week. Ideal. On a TUI flight or a partner airline.
This is your captain speaking.
Nice. How many nights? 3? 5? 14? Perfect. More options, more choice. All wrapped up with a TUI smile. TUI. Live happy. Atoll and Abtra protected. Booking T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
It's that time of year again. Which can only mean one thing. Save a third off roasting joints at Waitrose. Choose from tender beef silverside, succulent whole brined and seasoned chicken, or juicy beach smoked gammon. So, fire up your ovens and give winter a warm welcome with a third off roasting joints. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and Concessions. Offer ends 11th of November.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
20 minutes after 8. A lot of you are responding to the interview I had with the Veterans Minister there. Not necessarily impressed with total lack of knowledge of some areas, but also I need to give you that number again. So this is Operation Fortitude. So if you are a member of the armed forces or you know of someone who is sleeping rough, nowhere to go last night, nowhere to go tonight, there's a special hotline set up and it's a free telephone number. And I'll give it to you again, 0800 952-0774. That's 0800 952-0774 for Operation Fortitude. And we will return to that subject in the next hour. Are we doing enough for our veterans? That figure north of 3,000 on, it is believed, anyone like, particularly as we approach Christmas. And I know for some of these ex-military personnel, they have emotional issues, but surely we should be doing more. Now, let's come back to the story. Who was it who said, BBC Verify is transparency in action, fact-checking, verifying video, countering disinformation, analysing data, explaining complex stories in the pursuit of truth. This is our promise to consumers. We understand their trust must be earned and we will show them how we're doing that each and every day. That was Deborah Turness, the so-called CEO or head of BBC News, when she launched the ludicrous BBC Verify unit in May 2023, which is accompanied by videos such as...
Disinformation. You think you're winning.
There's no climate change.
Fooling people in the most sophisticated ways.
I control them. Clive Murray, who is a great bloke. No criticism at all to Mr. Murray. But that is the mindset that you've got to try and cut through. Let's keep to get some of your social media. Derek, you will be the next caller, but must do some of this. Ron Adams, everyone's saying the BBC made mistakes. If you doctor a speech, it's not a mistake. It's something done intentionally. It was deliberate. But many of your callers are not saying how good the BBC are. Put it on a prescription basis and see how many subscribers you get. This is the idea, of course, that many would say. Karen Murdoch is not impressed. I don't think any relation. The Director General of the BBC quits over a documentary on Trump. He's the most petulant man-child on the planet. Give me a break. I watched it on TV. Trump encouraged the whole thing. That is an argument, but what you can't do is doctor clips in such a fashion as to make him say pretty much the opposite at times of what he was saying. Lastly, this comes in, oh, similar point, Charles. These things at the BBC are not mistakes. They were done on purpose. It's inept. Derek's in Northallerton. Derek, your point. Good morning.
Yes, good morning. I am concerned. These two characters have resigned. Have they jumped before they were sacked to save on their gold-plated pensions?
You'd have to ask them. My sense is probably not, actually. And the fact that they've gone in tandem the day before, there's some kind of apology that will be made by the chairman, Samir Shah. I would imagine they've gone because they felt they had to.
Yeah. And I can't understand why the Labour Minister, Lisa,
Lisa Nandy, the Culture Secretary?
Yeah, pat them on the back and thank them for all their good work when they've actually brought the BBC into disrepute. What's she thanking them for?
Well, that is, of course, the role of the Culture Secretary or government ministers. They have to think long and hard as to whether they want to get too involved. Where are you on them? Do you think, what would they need to do to win back your trust?
It's not a wildest programme I listen to at the BBC.
Sorry, you don't listen to the BBC, did you say, sir?
Not very rarely.
Very rarely, okay. All right.
You can't keep on doing what you've got on. But we've never heard anything about the reporters who actually put this story together.
Well, that's more likely to be, of course, well, yes, a producer, I think, I sense, more than a reporter. Okay, at least the member of staff will know he, she has yet to be identified. But, of course, if you've got the boss and you've got the head of news, you've probably gone as far as you can. Derek, thank you for that. David asks, why do the BBC editors want to attempt to destroy Trump and on behalf of whom? The answer is the same people who are now trying to get control of the BBC. Oh, don't buy that nonsense. This is, and I have huge respect for Nick Robinson. He's a tremendous journalist, a really, really decent bloke. But this idea is all some kind of plot to take control of the BBC. Come, no, that's just, Nick, come on, you know that's not factual. David in Belfast, Tim Davey made some bad decisions, and the buck for the bad decisions did stop with him. However, there are wider impartiality problems. This is an issue for senior news managers who created this mess and are still in their jobs, whether it's Panorama or the Gaza programmes or the relentless bias on issues like trans. Well, never lose sight of that interview with, or that piece by Mark Urban in one of the papers today, who was at Newsnight, a presenter over at Newsnight, where they're talking about an issue and they say we can get J.K. Rowling, and someone says, no, she's problematical. Oh, we won't have her then. The idea you could get her to contribute to an interview. Right, we must reflect other stories, and we shall. And some troubling news on the weekend. TV star Davina McCall sent this post.
I'm talking about this because I think it might help someone. And this is what I always do. So I just wanted to tell you that I have had breast cancer. I found a lump a few weeks ago. And it came and went. But then I was working on The Masked Singer and Lorraine, the TV show, Lorraine Kelly, I put signs on the back of all the doors saying, check your breasts. And every time I went for a wee, I did that. And it was still there. And then one morning I saw it in the mirror and I thought, I'm going to get that looked at. So I had a biopsy. I found out it was indeed breast cancer. And I had it taken out in a lumpectomy nearly 3 weeks ago. And the margins, they take out a little bit extra. And they checked the margins, and the margins are clear. It was very, very small, so I got it very, very early, which is incredibly lucky. But I am so relieved to have had it removed and to know that it hasn't spread.
Now, there was coverage in one newspaper yesterday, The Mail on Sunday, and their resident doctor, Dr. Ellie Cannon, wrote a piece. Obviously, what sad news it was. But her outlook is good, says the doctor. Treatment for the disease, which affects 55,000 women a year, is, according to the doctor now, excellent. But the doctor writes, many women will understandably now be wondering whether 58-year-old Davina's well-publicised and long-term use of hormone replacement therapy, or HRT, to treat her menopause symptoms could have played a role in the development of the disease. Well, let's put that to Dr. Sarah Gray, who's a GP specialist in women's health, non-executive director of the Primary Care Women's Health Society, providing education for healthcare professionals. Well, that's the question. What are the potential or feared links, doctor? Good morning.
Good morning to you. Right, this is a really hot, sort of contentious issue.
Yeah, but a hot to the potato, best, as it were.
A yeah. hot potato. To the best of our understanding, HRT does not start or cause breast cancer. It's a really complicated thing. There's more than one sort of it. And it can be years and years and years before it becomes evident. But what we do know is that most breast cancer cells are sensitive to hormones. So if there's more hormones about, they'll grow a bit quicker. So our understanding of the role of HRT is that it may have made it grow a little bit faster than if she hadn't taken HRT, and possibly has been picked up a bit earlier than it might otherwise have done, is where the science sits at the moment.
As a healthcare professional, how comfortable or otherwise do you feel when people are prescribed HRT? Should there be some kind of warning or caveat given, doctor?
Oh, we always yeah. sit down and say, these are the pros and these are the cons.
Yeah.
And the Cancer Research UK tell us that during their lifetime, 1 in 7 women will get breast cancer. It's really common. It mostly happens as you get older, because cancer is more common as you get older. But we absolutely lay it on the line and say, this will make the difference. However, the scale of the risk is about the same as being really overweight, and about the same as having a glass of wine a day. So it needs to be seen in context, and understanding that there is an increase, but it's relatively small, and most people will go with the being vigilant, going for their mammograms when called, and picking it up as early as possible.
Well, in this case, Ms. McCall says how she saw a poster at a television studios where she was working, save your life, be sure to check your breasts. What should women be feeling for when they check their breasts, doctor?
Well, actually, they should be looking as well as feeling, and that's what Davina tells us. Stand in front of a mirror, raise your arms up, check that there's nothing that looks as if it's catching or drawing in or altering the shape of the breast or making the skin look different. So start off by looking and then feeling and knowing what is normal for you. Because if you pick up something that isn't normal for you, then you can have it checked.
And lastly, is it just the breast you're feeling for lumps and bumps, or do you go on your arms or anywhere else? Where should one
go? No, just breast. Breast tissue, the breast obviously sits in front of the chest wall. It goes up towards the armpit. And we would ask women to check by pressing hard against the rib cage wall up into their armpit and just check that they can't feel anything knobbly up there. But there's no need to go down into arms or tummy or anywhere else.
Grateful for your time today. Thank you, Dr. Sarah Gray, GP specialist in women's health and non-executive director of the Primary Care Women's Health Society. Coming up after the news, we will go back to the BBC scandal and also this idea to solve the problem of asylum seekers in hotels. Give them each £100 a week, but where are they going to sleep? You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. The time is 8:30. The headlines are with Lottie Morley.
The BBC's Director General, Tim Davey, has resigned over claims a Panorama documentary misled viewers. The Chief Executive of News, Deborah Turnis, has also stepped down after clips of Donald Trump were said to be selectively edited. The US Senate has taken the first step to ending the longest government shutdown in history. Enough Democrats have now agreed to support Republican plans to extend federal funding. And world leaders are meeting at the edge of the Amazon rainforest in Brazil for the latest COP summit. They'll work together to try to find a way to tackle climate change. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK this morning, brightening up later on with highs of 15 degrees.
LBC.
Penry's best ever Black Friday sale is now on, and it doesn't get any better than this, with an extra 10% off absolutely everything. That's on top of up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, control your blinds from anywhere with a half-price smart hub when you buy any electric blind, with measuring and fitting always included. And word to the window wise. Order now for blinds and curtains fitted in time for Christmas. Book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. Conditions apply.
Amazon offers term time working to their employees, like Anton, who's home to look after his daughters during their holidays.
Hello!
To him, this is the best sound in the world. Actually, maybe that's the best sound of all. Now that's term time working. Offered at Amazon. 10 weeks off guaranteed per year. Mix of paid holiday and unpaid time off. Conditions apply.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Can we come to that story I've already mentioned a couple of times. Migrants to be offered £100 a week. More on that in a moment. 8:33 is the time. But Katie's in Watford, been hanging on the line for some time to talk about developments with the BBC. Katie, how do you think they would win back? How would they go about winning back your trust? Good morning.
Good morning, thank you. I think this should only be the start. I think the problem is, you know, we know that with social media, you know, you're not getting factual information. There are certain, you know, news outlets and news networks which are paid for by advertising are deeply sectarian and politicised. The BBC is meant to be the bastion of independence. It's taxpayer funded. It's not beholden to advertisers. Yep. I'm deeply concerned about children, for example, who are known to, you know, their teachers recommend, check it out on the BBC.
Yep.
Certainly with the coverage of Gaza, you know, the lie goes across the world, doesn't get verified. And when you know, the Telegraph expose talks about, you know, on average, two stories a week had to be, you know, rectified by BBC. I think the way to go about it is to an independent inquiry and processes and mechanisms to make sure that the facts that they are putting out are true. Obviously, you want the news to be quick and speedy, mm-hmm. but putting out lies has deeply troubling effects. And I think it contributes, if not leads, to anti-Semitism in the case of the Israel-Gaza conflict.
Are you happy to pay? It'll soon be £180 a week for this.
I mean, I am still paying. I'm a law-abiding citizen, but I don't watch it, and I don't use it as information, not just on the Gaza-Israel conflict, because I know, you know, I know from other sources that it's troubling and irrelevant or factually untrue. But it makes me consider whatever they're putting out, whether it's talking about migrants, talking about domestic issues, international issues. It's deeply concerning. I do currently pay it, but I think that we shouldn't pay it until it's really up to standard. And I think it needs to be independently verified, and there's some systems to be put in place immediately.
How confident, seeing the size, the vast organisation, how confident are you that that could be attained? Do you not think, by the way, we need to retain parts of it, but it's just too big. It's like the Home Office. It's too big to govern.
I think that's correct. I think it needs to be, you know, as I say, independently looked at whether or not that is paying for someone in the private sector to reform it. Look at, you know, where savings can be made and where there can be efficiencies obtained. Mm. But I do think that certainly in the case of confidence, the public has lost it. And I'm glad this expose has come out now, because we've been saying it in the community for a long time.
Katie, thank you. Have yourself a safe day. Jeremy in East Grinstead, the BBC scandal is beginning to sound like the Post Office scandal. Senior management turning their heads when independent organisations spotted the issue, protecting themselves and the organisation. Well, never lose sight. Michael Prescott, the so-called whistleblower who was investigating editorial standards, he filed that report in May. And by the way, it was made public by the newspaper, the Daily Telegraph. They sat on their hands for 4 days. I can only presume, hoping it would go away. Their knowledge of the news business really, really shone up there. Mike in Caterham, can we believe a single BBC news report? They physically changed and replayed an edited speech of the President of the United States. David says, the BBC is the one international media organisation the world's oligarchs can't get control of yet. They control social media, the newspapers, but they're after the BBC. They're not after the BBC. The BBC is state-funded. That is how we get it. That's why the... And they accept that. That's why the parameters or whatever, the metrics by which they judge, are of a different level. Because you have to pay to get the BBC. And they should be providing a buzz. And I take you back again to the idea that J.K. Rowling not offered an interview because she's problematic. What does that speak to the mindset there? Now, you don't have to listen to me. If you listen to me, I hope you do. Listen to my colleagues, I hope you do. But the BBC is a very, very different organisation, governed and judged by different standards. We'll have more on that in a moment. Let's go to other matters. And front page news. Asylum seekers are to be given £100 a week to leave taxpayer-funded hotels under plans being considered by ministers. Home Office officials are proposing migrants use the money to live with their family or an individual they know. It's part of Keir Starmer's drive to accelerate the closure of asylum hotels. It's understood the £100 a week would be provided on top of their taxpayer-funded support, which, by the way, if it's important to you, is £49.18. It will be trialled next year and would cut the bill for housing asylum seekers to a seventh of the current cost. In the latest data, more than 32,000 migrants were housed in 200 hotels at an average cost of a little over £1,000 a week. Robert Bates is Research Director at the Centre for Migration Control. I've read out all the figures. Let's look at the facts. What's the likelihood of this working in your view, Mr. Bates? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, first of all, I think this is another one of those instances where the Labour government has floated an idea out there before, or has had an idea floated out there for it before it's worked out its legitimacy. I think the reason why they're starting to look around in such ideas is because they are really struggling actually to acquire the necessary accommodation, whether that be hotels or whether that be a dispersal accommodation in HMOs, because there is such a shortage of available suppliers. So I think that's probably why we're seeing this. I think there are several problems with that, with this proposal. I think, first of all, of course, increasing the amount that you're paying to an individual will be a pull factor, undoubtedly. You know, we're now looking at close to sort of £500 a month that these individuals would like to be receiving. I think we also need to address the fact that the individuals that they would be potentially staying with, whether that be family members or individuals that they know, is a lot harder to actually to vet, a lot harder to actually ensure that the accommodation is suitable. It might be in places, in communities where perhaps it just is entirely inappropriate for them to be housed there. We then also need to consider that if they are away from the hotels, it makes the ongoing monitoring that is needed to ensure these individuals are actually staying in touch with authorities a lot harder. I mean, already hotels have quite a lax sort of set of criteria that require these individuals to check in. But I think if we're sort of removing them from hotels and any touch of security, it is very likely that we will see the number of individuals simply disappear, increase, and especially those who have had their asylum claims rejected. Once they have their claim rejected, they're of course able to stay in accommodation for a lot longer. But I think we'll see an increase in the number of people that are sort of filing implicit withdrawals, as it's referred to, where they just simply disappear into the ether.
Well, the other idea, as you're probably aware, Robert, is that these folk who are continually, if they abandon their asylum claims, they will get £3,000 through a voluntary return scheme to, and I quote, find somewhere to live, find a job or start a business in their country of origin. So that's effectively £3,000 to go home.
Well, it is another bung, and I do think in particular this will be problematic when it comes to individuals who aren't claiming asylum having arrived on a small boat but have claimed asylum via study visas or work visas, who make up half of asylum claims that we see every year. I think actually what you'll see therefore is a lot of individuals from countries such as Pakistan and Albania, those countries that are set out as viable sort of arrangements, more likely to lodge an asylum appeal, because why wouldn't you if there is the opportunity of receiving quite a lucrative bung for doing so? I think, unfortunately, voluntary returns are far cheaper than enforced deportations, and in certain instances are far more appropriate for the taxpayer and for the individual being removed. But I think if we're going to just sort of have a blanket rule of this being an available option, especially when you look at the nationalities, many of whom actually aren't small boat sort of nationalities, but are individuals that have arrived on certain visas, as I say, then I think you will, again, end up increasing the problem rather than sort of reducing the asylum backlog and the number of asylum cases.
Lastly, can't really conclude a conversation with you, Robert, without asking the one-in, one-out scheme. How is that going to date?
Dismally, I think it's, you know, we've had to have a sort of celebrations about the fact that we've managed to re-return an individual who snuck back into the country. I think it's been a huge white elephant. I think it's been a huge distraction from the actual conversations that we needed. And it's the Labour Party's fault for coming into government and scrapping any semblance of a third country return, such as those that the Conservatives were trying to put in place, albeit failing dismally to do so. I think, unfortunately, this is something that the Labour Party will eventually try and abandon very quickly from their armoury, because it isn't going to be the silver bullet that they attempted to convince the electorate that it was going to be.
Robert Bates is Research Director at the Centre for Migration Control. Thanks for your input. Taking us to 8:42, exactly set your clock, your watch, or check your mobile phone. Munesh in Southall, you want to come back to our conversation about the BBC. How can they restore trust? They say that this is going to be their mission. Minister knows how they're going to do it. Munesh, morning.
Morning, morning. I've got a couple of things to say, but in relation to what the BBC can do, it's very tough because it's impossible to do it currently as it sits, because it's like if you've got a house with foundation problems and your house is sinking and there's cracks in the wall, just getting the plaster and filling in the cracks and painting, it doesn't solve the problem. You've got to go deep down. You know, if the genetic DNA of the recruitment process is messed up.
So what's the, to keep your metaphor going, what's the underpinning that needs to take place?
Well, first of all, I think the recruitment process has to change, that the pool of people that you choose from has to change, and perhaps we should have an independent body that vets the people that are coming in decent professional roles.
Oh, Lord, would you... Gosh, that would take forever, wouldn't it?
Exactly. So I think they've really shot themselves in the foot over the last 10 years. 20 years ago, they had an immaculate reputation of impartiality, and now what they've done with Donald Trump, we're in the middle of a billion-dollar trade deal with Donald Trump. We need Donald Trump to have trust and faith in the British people and the British government. And by dissecting his speech, they've just ruined that.
Well, yes, you're right, but it's the very fact that it's such a journalistic fail you should concentrate on. Because just as, by the way, to your point, yes, we do need a deal with Trump, but I would be as opposed to cutting Trump audio to make it sound even better, to make it better for him, to try and get us on an even better trade deal. You can't doctor the audio, whatever you do, whether you're trying to make the president look good to get a trade deal or bad because you don't like him. You just don't do it, Munesh.
Yes, because you're not giving a view that's representative of his speech. You're making the speech what you want it to be, not what it actually is. And in any concept, that is wrong fundamentally. But when it comes to, for example, the license fee, I think that if the people that have paid the license fee over the 6 years, they should be demanding a refund, because at the end of the day, you were sold something that was based on impartiality. Mm. You didn't get that. You didn't get what you paid for. By definition, there should be a law court claim by all the people that have paid. And I'm surprised Donald Trump is not trying to sue the BBC after what they've done to him.
Oh, don't give him more ideas. Munesh, thank you. Let's get one call in before... Thank you, Munesh. Stephen is in Nantes. Stephen, you want to talk about the recruitment process at the BBC, I believe. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Nick. Nice to talk.
Good to have you.
Yes, indeed. In the 70s, I was working in advertising, and we decided to do a survey on where the BBC was recruiting its staff.
Mm-hmm.
And 100% of their ads at that time, and the Telegraph ran a leader showing all the jobs it was advertising, taken from The Guardian.
The Guardian.
Only The Guardian was running the ads for the BBC. And that's all the BBC staff read these days.
And unfortunately, we talked about this in the first hour, of course not every single person who works at the BBC newsroom is going to only read The Guardian, but they basically are preaching to the same mindset almost every day in their news meetings.
Exactly, yeah.
Stephen, thank you for the point you make. All right, we'll continue that conversation. But we're going to come back in the next hour to the interview I had with the Veterans Minister, Louise Sandhare-Jones. Now, she's talking about £27 million being found for what are called valour centres to help veterans. Mr. How many valour centres is it hoped there will be able to be provided nationwide?
So I want a good geographical spread across the country, particularly in areas where we have high representation of veterans.
But how many will there be?
So this, we haven't set a particular number, because this is about having the applications in.
It didn't get any better when I asked who was going to staff them. And when I asked how many homeless veterans are sleeping on the streets, it got even worse. Stay tuned for that in the next hour. But coming up after the news... Our arguably one of the most successful journalists I've ever worked for. No, not him. Les Hinton, who was Rupert Murdoch's key lieutenant, has turned thriller writer. You'll hear from him after this. 8:46 LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
Donald Trump has welcomed the resignation of two of the most senior bosses at the BBC. A deal aimed at ending the government shutdown in the US has passed the Senate, and a new colour-coded report card system will now be used in schools across England. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK this morning, brightening up later on with highs of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays on the M25 clockwise from junction 8 at Reigate to 11 at Chertsey following an accident. And also anti-clockwise on that stretch is busy from junction 14 at Heathrow. The A2 is very slow westbound at Dartford Heath. There was an accident that happened earlier. All the lanes are back open, but there are delays back past the M25. And also long delays continue on the A21 Tunbridge bypass going southbound to the A26. An oil spillage is causing these long delays, as only one lane is open. On the North Circular Road, eastbound Keyston New Southgate, that's following an accident. And also eastbound, it's very slow to Brent Cross, and that's where a van has broken down.
LBC.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally. Every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
No one sees your small business like you do. The feeling when that unexpected big contract comes in. The butterflies. But that's the exciting bit of it being your business. And you wouldn't have it any other way. So breathe it all in. When your business is your life, we exist to help you live. Search O2Business.
For anyone needing assistance when travelling with TfL, such as people with visual or mobility impairments, our Turn Up and Go service has staff on hand to help. It's available at all London Underground, London Overground and Elizabeth Line stations, and there's no need to book. Just turn up and go. That is how we're making the greener way to travel more accessible to all. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 10 minutes before 9. We'll come back to the BBC in a moment. Now, one of the privileges, one of the joys of this job is that sometimes you get to people who get to interview people who you both like and you admire. And one sitting opposite me now is both. Les Hinton was my boss for many, many years. Les served as executive chairman of News International, CEO of Dow Jones. But it's a change of career for Les as he's now become a thriller writer. And, Les, the reviews are in. For the time, suspenseful and well-plotted, the novel benefits from Les Hinton's close-up knowledge of what it calls the fading empires of print. For The Express, hold the front page. Hinton's thriller debut is a belter. Mail Online, crammed with insider knowledge, told with verve, it foretells the decline of newspapers, but not of excellent reporters. You were a reporter, mostly, I think you'll allow, on the tabloid side of things, Les, before you climbed the management,
that's true.
Management ladder. You had to turn out 85,000 words for the novel, Dying Days. How difficult was it?
Really difficult, but for two reasons. When you're a journalist,
and you've got editors hovering over your shoulder, you're under the terrible pressure of a deadline. But when you're writing yourself and you're in a room by yourself and you've got to try and produce maybe, if I'm lucky, 1,000 words a day, it is bloody hard to do. And that was the thing I find most difficult. But that's the that was the tough side. The other side of it is, and you know this very well, if you spend enough time in journalism, all human life passes you by.
Yep.
And so you build up this massive groundwork of experience. We both have seen, we've seen wars, we've seen poverty, we've seen riches, we've seen power, we've seen helplessness. All those things come together, and you use, and that's what fertilizes your imagination. So what I didn't realize was that all those years I was laboring as a journalist, I was actually training myself to feed my imagination when it came to making up a story that's kind of a mixture of truth and thrill and fiction.
So what's the biggest change from being a reporter, an editor, and an executive to being a writer? I imagine there's the loneliness and having to... Do you have to structure chapter by chapter? How do you do it?
Well, I mean, it's a combination of both, because some people can... novelists, I've discovered, having read a lot about them, they can start with just a basic idea and go on and on and on. I actually need to know how my novel is going to finish before I can start it. So I've got some destination. And
that's the journo in you, isn't it? That's like you write the intro to try and get everybody, then you get some quotes, and then you give the conclusion.
But because the liberty is, and I know journalists are accused occasionally of making things up, but the truth is that you need an imagination to create characters. And I've created characters that a lot of my friends are saying, well, that's so-and-so, that's so-and-so. And I do have a 90-plus-year-old tycoon who's got a war-torn face from his years of...
Who could that possibly be?
Well, I have to tell you, it's not Rupert Murdoch.
Of course it's not. We don't want to give too much away, but it is literally an explosive start to your book.
Yes.
Tell us a little what happens without giving... Oh, by the way, I'm reading it. I've just got to the bit where they're in an Upper East Side deli and the bacon's fallen to the floor and he doesn't like the eggs. Do you know that?
Yeah, I remember that very well.
That's where I've got...
Well, you've got to the good part, because it really starts to gain pace from there on. But the book itself... basically, the theme, it's called Dying Days because it's the fading days of newspapers as you and I remember them. And it's going into a period of proper difficulty in terms of the lack of trust, the hatred even towards certain media, a lack of trust, mass hatred by particular people. And what I did with the book was to, and you say it was an explosive start, I wanted to hopefully it's all fiction, to talk about the catastrophic consequences. But I'm amazed of those people who've read it, and even some of the reviewers who said, and I think Jeffrey Archer, for instance, was kind enough to write something for the cover. His last line was, "Could it happen?"
Right. Okay.
And so I think for journalists globally, but more particularly here and in the States, are facing an atmosphere of animosity that didn't exist when I was on the road.
Is it the dying days of print?
Well, I think it's fair to say that the fading days of ink on crushed trees is gone, and so with it is all that wonderful culture and of the old hacks and the atmosphere of newspapers. You know, because in those days, going back, when you and I were both in print, the media was like a pyramid where there were a few people at the very top who decided what everyone else was going to hear. And now it's been inverted. So anyone with that little hypnotic screen in their pockets can access as much information as they can possibly bring, and of course they can disseminate as much crazy lies and nuts and as they want to, and that's the kind of difference of the world. The world is now, it's very hard to know when you're sitting, if you're not an educated person or educated to understand what it is you can believe, what's true, what isn't true. Although newspapers were never entirely accurate, fair to say. The fact is that now you can have real trouble dissecting, well, is this true or isn't it true? Was the election stolen or wasn't the election stolen? You know, these are the things.
My latest wife, Claire, who you've met, says the characters are clearly set up for a sequel. Is that right?
Well, that's the optimist in me. and I can clear... I mean, I've written a bunch of a second novel, and I've got some good ideas for Dan Brasher and his team to go on. And there are lots of things hanging.
He's the journo who sort of triumphed through the book.
He's
for one
the journalist. Yes, they're trouble journalists. They've all got to be trouble, like cops, like cops in the TV series. They've always got to have real problems, and he's got his share of them. But he's idealistic, and I can see him. He's got a terrible relationship with his very rich father. I can see them that evolving into something. Should the moment happen?
Let's talk about a couple of other things. You ran News International. You were CEO of Dow Jones. You've been newspaper editors. You're no stranger to newspaper issues or journalistic problems. Yes. What do you make of the BBC at the moment?
I think it is such a fascinating thing, and I've had many difficult moments with the BBC over the years. But at its heart, it is a big business, an operation that's too powerful with too little leadership. And the fact is, you might have better luck herding 30,000 cats than getting the BBC to behave itself in a way it should. And I don't think they... And one of your earlier callers made this very good point. When I was running newspapers here, The Guardian was packed when print carried all the recruitment advertising, packed with ads for the BBC. They were sustaining the BBC. So when you cut forward 20 years, these people that were all recruited then out of Oxford and Cambridge, all the places they came from, they're now in place, not all of them, and not all of them are guilty of being biased. But I don't think... Well, I don't think they think they're being biased.
No, but they're the boss class.
They're the boss class. So that left of centre thing is there. I think they do struggle. You can see sometimes when they're struggling not to be like it. But the issue of the Trump video. I mean, the fact is that was so dumb because everybody knows that during that speech. Trump was not encouraging people to behave themselves, let's put it that way. And what did you need to play around with it for? Was it just convenience of editing? Was it just really malign, twisted?
Do you think there's a sinister streak in that?
If I had to bet, it's not, and I'm sure that, and everyone will know, a lot of people will know this, that will have been produced by an outside production company.
Yeah.
But still, who was the editor that approved it? It's the same with the issue of the pregnant people. Yeah. I mean, who was the editor? Yeah. Who's the person that wrote it? Who's the editor that cleared it? And thank goodness for the newsreader who had the brains to say what
Martin
she said,
Croxall.
and then be berated and disciplined for doing so. I mean, that's clearly
right.
Something's wrong.
Finally, a grandchild rings you up and says, "Granddad, Papa, whatever he calls you, I want to go into journalism. I want to follow what you've done." What would your advice be?
Well, I've been given that advice to my 19-year-old grandson.
Oh,
I've said, you know what? Make sure that your university includes courses in business, because I think communication, and I don't think journalism is dead. I think it's reforming.
What would the 20-year-old Les Hinton want to do now? Well, 20, were you in Oz when you don't know?
No, well, I started with working on a newspaper with Rupert when I was 15. So I didn't have any, and I'd always wanted to be in newspapers because they were the thing to do.
So what would young Les be looking online?
Well, I mean, there were loads of outlets. I mean, if you're a writer, something like Substack, for instance, which a lot of people won't know about, is getting a real centre of gravity. There is broadcast. I mean, you know, you've made a phenomenal success of your post-print. Well, everyone else knows that you've made a tremendous success of it. And that, because there is a clear thinking, opinion and news is going to live forever.
Last question. I've got the press release here concerning Dying Days. Hinton said, quotes, "Everything went seamlessly from my first draft to the final print." That's the first time ever in your career that everything went seamlessly.
I was exaggerating a bit, but Dying Days is a great result, and it's on sale, and the critics love it, the public are buying it, so thank you very much.
I wish you nothing but success. Great to see you. Les Hinton, thank you. Dying Days, the author's Les Hinton. This is LBC, 9 o'clock. News is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the White House has welcomed the resignation of two of the BBC's most senior bosses. The Director General and Chief Executive of News have stepped down over criticism about a Panorama documentary about Donald Trump. Journalists are accused of editing the US President's speech on the night of the Capitol riots in a way that misled viewers. Leader of Reform UK, Nigel Farage, has told Nick he's not surprised.
Did speak to Donald Trump on Friday, and to say that he was angry would be an understatement. As he said, "I thought you guys were allies." And this was a state broadcaster. Absolutely appalling, but it's just the latest of a long list of political biases that we see running throughout the BBC.
The BBC's chairman is expected to apologise later. Government Minister Louise Santa-Jones says told Nick she still has trust in the corporation.
There have been editorial failings at the BBC. And of course, I think it's also very fair to say that the BBC is one of our hugely important national institutions. There's a huge amount of respect and trust for the BBC. But it is clear in this instance that there were some editorial failings.
A deal aimed at ending the government shutdown in the US has passed the Senate. It's the first sign of progress after a 40-day deadlock that's affected domestic flights and food benefits for people on low incomes. It still needs to be approved by the House of Representatives. More than 140 people have been arrested by the Metropolitan Police in a week-long crackdown on crime in London's West End. 100 additional officers from the force were deployed as part of Operation Baselife. They were targeting shop and phone theft, violent against women and girls, and other antisocial behaviour. The co-op says it will push ahead with a number of new stores after a major cyber attack. The hack, back in April, stole data from all of its members and left shops with empty shelves. The retailer says it will also move forward with major refurbishments at existing stores. And schools across England will now receive a colour-coded mark from Ofsted. The regulator is updating the way it assesses schools, replacing one-word judgments. It will now provide more detailed comments on things like behaviour, leadership and personal development. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 66 points at 97.49. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK this morning, brightening up later on though with some dry and bright spells, feeling mild with highs of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Hey Sainsbury's, any recommendations for a cosy Sunday lunch that's easy on the wallet?
How about a whole leg of lamb? Half price with Nectar. Now that's a treat that'll really make your Sunday.
Roast lamb. Comforting, delicious and perfect for leftovers.
Want to save big on your winter roast? Ask Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's, good food for all of us.
Buy Sainsbury's whole leg of lamb offer ends 18th of November. 18 plus, Nectar required. Available in store and online excluding locals. Subject to availability, T&Cs apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 3 minutes after nine, Monday the 10th of November, as we approach the 11th day of the 11th month, of course, and we should all remember, there is a drive by the government to help give more support, so-called valour centres, costing £27 million. We'll replay you the interview, and then I want to hear from you as veterans if you think they're doing enough, or maybe you have a veteran in your family, your ex-wife, your ex-husband, it might be. We need to hear your views on that. Plus, no shortage of views on the problems with which the BBC now is beset and the hole in which it finds itself. Reform UK, long campaign, scrap the licence fee. Nigel Farage told me in the previous hour.
Did speak to Donald Trump on Friday, and to say that he was angry would be an understatement. As he said, I thought you guys were allies, and this was a state broadcaster.
And on the subject of potholes, here's Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander.
It's no laughing matter. If you hit a pothole, you end up taking your car to the garage. It costs you hundreds of pounds to get it sorted. And so it's imperative that this new Labour government takes action to fix this.
And it's certainly no laughing matter to be in the local authority where they've told residents one pothole, they'll get round to fixing it in 103 years' time with the current rota. But where is that local authority? Stay tuned to find out.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Having had the benefit of speaking there with Les Hinton, who's a very, very senior journalist, effectively ran News International, as was then called for Rupert Murdoch, and then ran Dow Jones as well, who's also held a senior position at Fox when I worked for him over there, over in the States, you are reminded of a very simple journalistic rule. Who, what, where, when, why, how. You can write any story in the world, who, what, where, when, why, how. So when a government minister comes on to talk about £27 million in funding for what are called valour centres, don't be surprised that you might be asked, how many will that provide? Where will they be? What will the qualifications of the staff be? The minister was Louise Sandher-Jones, talking about valour, which seems a very, very merited idea. Government's mission to create a joined-up support network for military veterans. You may be familiar if you've lived or travelled or worked in the United States, you often see these in what are called shopping malls, and they will be centres for their vets, their veterans. It's a very good idea. But all I wanted was a few more details.
How many, do we call them valour centres, Minister? How many valour centres is it hoped there will be able to be provided nationwide?
So I want a good geographical spread across the country, particularly in areas where we have high representation of veterans. Centres that wish to be part of the Valour Network can apply for up to £1 million of funding, sort of between 500,000 and £1 million. And it's what's super important is that there is this physical location across the UK where veterans can go and ask the questions and get the answers that they need.
But how many will there be?
So this, we haven't set a particular number because this is about having the applications in. Of course, we're going to have a standardised output that we want these centres to have so that we know that veterans are getting what they need. But each centre, we want to make sure that we recognise the local nuances, work with the fantastic work that charities are already doing across the country.
We must have an idea, though, this £27 million. I mean, how much does each one cost per annum? What is the setup costs?
So again, it's going to be hugely dependent on the type of charity or CIC that asks for funding. So some places may be asking for a bit less money. For example, they may already have their own funding streams that pay for the location, for instance, and they may be asking for some help with funding caseworkers. This funding is set to be over 3 years. They can ask for a maximum of £1 million, but they can really ask for any amount up to that. It's really dependent on what they have already, what they're able to offer, and what they need to be able to kind of cover up the gap to make up for what we want a Valour recognised centre, the kind of service we want them to provide.
And Minister, who will staff these centres?
So again, it's dependent on the charity or the CIC that gets involved. So for example, I know my local organisation has a mixture of caseworkers that come from a variety of different specialisms. So there are addiction support counsellors, for example, as well as people who are working on OpNova. And also those that are supporting OpFortitude. And this is something I really want to get across, Nick, and I wonder if you could help me with this, is OpFortitude, which is our helpline for any veteran that is facing sleeping on the streets tonight, or if you know a veteran that's sleeping on the streets tonight, call this number and the government will make sure that we find accommodation for them. And the number is, Nick, and this is a challenge for everybody to remember this number, 0800 952 0774. If you're a veteran facing sleeping on the streets tonight, call that number and we will find accommodation for you.
Don't worry, I will read it again at the end of the interview. I'll give you one last time, but I will give you when I conclude with the Minister. It's 0800 952 0774. Do you have an idea roughly how many veterans sleep rough on our streets each night as we approach Christmas, Minister?
So those numbers are really hard to know. And of course, one veteran on the streets is one veteran too many. We have obviously the number
of referrals. What sort of number do you think we might be talking of here?
So I think across the rough sleeping population, veterans certainly don't make up any more than we would expect to see. And I want to get that number down to zero. And that's why.
But what do you think the number is, Minister?
So we know with OpFortitude that we see referrals in the tens every week, and we know that we've helped over 1,000 people access housing through OpFortitude. And then we also know that those that are at risk of homelessness is a bigger number, and of course those stats are just very difficult to track. But actually, I really want to take this back to Valour, because one of the really key things that Valour
I don't think you know the figure, because I have asked you three times, and I would have thought if you want to talk about the importance of Operation Fortitude, it might have been an idea to look at the number, mightn't it, Minister?
No, so I think it's important to recognise that people who are sleeping on the streets, so the way we can collect that data, so it's really important to understand how we can collect the data.
It's 3,700, believed to be.
And, as we know, that is far too many people that are sleeping on the streets that are veterans.
That's the size of the challenge you and your colleagues are facing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why we've got Valour and we've got OpFortitude, which is to make sure that we can get that number down to zero.
Who, what, where? When, why, how? If you've got children, grandchildren going into journalism, those things, you write any story you like. The number, by the way, that is important to get out there, because someone sleeping or homeless sleeping rough last night or tonight, 0800 952 0774 or 0800 952 0774. So what is the reality if you are a veteran? Let's start with Jenny in Berkhamsted, who's phoned in first. Jenny, what do you want to say tonight?
Hello.
Jenny, you're on the radio, my dear.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello, Jenny, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. I just had a thought whilst I was listening to that very interesting debate about veterans.
Yeah.
And I wonder why, you know, we're downplaying or decommissioning the hotels for asylum seekers. Hang on a minute. Why don't we open up those hotels for veterans? Usually hotels have a meeting space, so there'll be a nice communal meeting space for
military. See where you're going. Keep going. Yeah, I'm with you now. Yeah, yeah,
and,
go on.
So if they can share experience, be in a safe environment with people that understand
what a good idea.
You know, the environment, and also, you know, apart from the social activities, I do think either the services or the government need to be able to provide PTSD care.
Yep.
You know, for the people that have disabilities due to war injury.
Yep.
Accommodation on the ground floor, make sure they're safe and secure, but not in a prison-like environment. I just don't think that's particularly healthy.
Currently, we spend £145 a night on housing these asylum seekers and migrants. That would, as you rightly say, Jenny, that would probably look after a soldier rather well, and then put a, as you say, like a mess room, a centre room where she can go, and they can have people there to help them with their issues.
Absolutely, absolutely, because not every ex-military has a safe space to go to.
You're absolutely right, Jenny. I think that's a brilliant idea. Thank you. Please excuse me finishing with you. It's because more people want to get involved in this conversation. Ryan's in Leeds, and I'm told that you are a veteran, Ryan. Is that correct? How long were you serving for, sir?
I am. I did 10 years.
Did you? When did you come out?
Yeah. I came out in 2015. I did 10 years in the Royal Engineers.
And how do you think your military services rewarded by this government and previous governments?
It all sounds good with sound bites and things like that, but it all falls down. I mean, I'm involved with a local veterans charity, or was, and we have had veterans come to us and ask for emergency accommodation, and they just passed the local council, who, you're a low priority. One male on the road, one female on the road. Well, one male on the road is a low priority for housing. We've tried, even things like Help to Heroes and not wanting to get involved. They've got tens of millions in funding. So when it comes to emergency crisis funding for veterans, it's just not there.
What happens to these people then?
They just fall off the grid. They go missing. A lot of them take their own lives. They feel like the country's lost. What they gave in service is just not rewarded.
What did you take from this idea of valour centres in that interview I had with the government minister, Ryan?
It's just going to be another something that will fall short. Any veteran who's needing help will get passed on to a local authority. Most local authorities, especially in Leeds, they're really not that bothered. The way that the social housing is set up is sort of against this kind of veteran in need kind of thing. It's like new migrants and things. You know, and at a time, I think they're just trying to buy time while the Legacy Act is repealed to try and garner favour, to make it look like they support veterans when they really don't.
Do you sense this government... But by the way, are all governments the same? Is this one particularly bad? I've got to note that you've been out of the army for some years now. Were the Conservatives just as poor?
No. Under David Cameron, I think the armed forces were absolutely brilliant. They absolutely flipped it on its head. We got support, we got the weapons, we got the need. We got everything that we needed to do the job. Since then, it's waned off a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
And have you ever, or someone you know, phoned this Operation Fortitude hotline, the one that's meant to give you accommodation that night? Has that ever tried it?
Well, to be honest, it's probably the first time I've heard of Hot Fortitude,
okay.
And I'm quite involved in the veteran community.
Oh,
but we've had to collect money together to help fellow veterans out for a night in a hotel and things like that.
Right.
But it's a smokescreen for, you know, what they're actually doing to veterans.
Yeah. Lastly, do you look back with affection at your service? Do you wish you hadn't done it? Do you wish you'd done longer? How do you look back at it, Ryan?
No, I'm really, really proud of my service, and I look back with fond memories of it. I really, really loved it. The way the military's gone with some of their wokeness and things is really, I think, damaged it. I think that's why they've gone a bit back to basics with that. But, you know, veterans don't want pity, they just want support, just like everyone else.
Of course they do.
And when it comes down to the bare basics, there's just not that 24-hour, 48-hour support that veterans need.
Thank you for your service. Thank you for your call and good luck with the work you're doing up there, Ryan. Thank you for that. More calls coming in. Kevin, you'll be the next call. Also coming up after the news, where have homeowners who've complained about a pothole in their road been told they'll have to wait for 103 years before the local authority can get round to it? I'll identify that council after this. 9:16 LBC News headlines now. Lottie Morley.
The BBC's chairman is expected to apologise after two of the organisation's most senior bosses stepped down. The US Senate has taken the first major step towards ending America's longest ever government shutdown. And world leaders will begin talks aimed at limiting global warming as COP30 begins in Brazil. LBC weather, cloudy with heavy rain for most of England and Wales this morning, brightening up later on with highs of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Severe delays continue on the M25 clockwise from Junction 8 at Reigate to 11 at Chertsey. It was after an accident that happened earlier. Everything's open now, but it's still slow. And anti-clockwise remains very busy from Junction 14 at Heathrow to 11 at Chertsey because of onlookers from earlier. Very busy on the A21, the Tunbridge bypass going southbound to the A26. There's been an oil spillage and only one lane's open. Also busy on the A2 westbound. There are delays of about half an hour from the M25. To the Falconwood interchange, and that was after an accident. The A12 is blocked northbound at Junction 12 at Mount Nessie, and that's also following an accident. And on the underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line.
This is LBC.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345-6060-973. LBC.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Managing your business is a big task. To then stay on top of the numbers as well? You're only human. That's why the Intuit QuickBooks AI-powered platform supports your business growth as the number one recommended cloud accounting software. Intuit QuickBooks. Based on a survey of 506 UK accounting professionals. Verify at quickbooks.co.uk/verify.
Have you ever wondered what a sandwich sounds like? Not much to it, is there? Unless, of course, it's a Walker's sandwich. Mmm, that is good. Now that's what a sarnie should sound like. Go all crispin with Walker's. Delicious.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Operation Valor, these Valor hubs. What did you call them? A network of hubs, in the words of the minister, but we don't know how many, we don't know where, we don't know exactly how they're going to be staffed. Kevin's in Liskeyard. Kevin, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Nick, good morning. I was incensed to hear the words of the minister when you asked and specifically pressed the question, how many and where will these hubs be? She refused to answer you, even though she knows full well what the answer is. And the answer is none. The government will establish no hubs anywhere in the UK in the term that she was describing. What they will actually do is make funding available to existing or new charities to apply for grant funding to set up their own systems. The reason this so exercised me is this common trend of politicians refusing to answer the difficult questions.
Yep.
But it's not a difficult question. It's an easy question. The answer is none. But providing that answer is awkward for them and they're uncomfortable with it. And I salute you, sir, for pressing, even though they still refuse. It's across all broadcast media.
Why do we treat our veterans so poorly and yet we can find hotel rooms for someone who arrives here this afternoon at Dover?
Two separate issues there, Nick. I don't believe we do treat our veterans poorly. There are more charities than you could shake a hairy stick at supporting serving and ex-serving personnel. There's still a problem, but there is an absolute industry set up around this third sector charity business. And I picked up on the words that your previous caller referenced, Opfortitude.
Yes.
Now, I wasn't going to mention that specific charity. I won't name them. But that charity has 13 employees that are between £60,000 and £100,000 salary,
wow,
and two that are between £100,000 and £120,000 salaries. They have a £10 million income per year. £500,000 is from one government contract. £1.5 million was from seven government grants.
Right.
Now, there is something of a scandal, in my view, around charitable organisations making second careers for certain people that enrich themselves from it.
Kevin, I have to finish there. Thank you for your kind words about the show. I'm only finished because other people want to have their say and I must get the other calls in. Kevin, thank you. From Kevin to Keith in Westrum. Keith, I think you share Kevin's jaundiced view of this. Good morning.
Right. Well, as I'm going to speak on behalf of one of these charities, I've got to have my totally neutral hat on.
Okay.
I am a volunteer with SAFA. That's the Soldiers, Sailors and Air Families Association.
Yes.
Known as the Armed Forces Charity.
Yes.
We are the oldest charity, older than the British Legion by some 40 years. We're 140 years old this year.
Uh-huh.
Now then, we deal with these people. The thing with these so-called hubs that the government are so-called setting up.
Yes.
They already exist.
Right. Okay.
From John O'Groats to Penzance, from Anglesey to Folkestone, they're usually called breakfast clubs.
Right.
And armed forces personnel get together. Ex-armed forces personnel get together to these hubs.
But how do veterans find out about them? And are they just open during breakfast hours? Keith?
They're all local. There's certainly one in every town and nearly every village in the up and down the country. So just locally.
But how are people meant to find where it is, Keith?
Do they go to SAFA? There is a large armed forces community wherever they are. And they will know.
You're in Westrum. So let's say that there is an ex-military bloke, perhaps not quite fully emotionally strong at the moment, living in, I'm just going to pick somewhere, Dunton Green. How does he find out where the nearest one is? What does he do?
He can phone SAFA. I'll give you the telephone number for certainly the South East region. But
I know SAFA. Okay. And they've got a list. But is it just breakfast they offer, lastly, Keith?
It's community breakfast clubs.
Yes. You see, and well done. And please don't, I'm not being negative in any fashion. It's great. But I think the feeling is, Keith, that the government want these centres to be open all day. So not just breakfast, hubs, as they call them. These hubs all day. Do you think that makes a difference?
The support is there all day long. Now, as I say, I'm going to take my hat off, my SAFA hat off, and put my personal hat on for a second.
Because
if the government concentrated just as much on stop prosecuting soldiers of cases 50 years old and look to protect them, then that would be far, far better.
Think of the money that's been spent at Belfast and other courts where they try and put through four ex-paras, who, by the way, once it gets before the courts, normally it's thrown out immediately. Keith, thank you. Take both your hats off and enjoy the rest of your day. Perhaps you put your walking hat on if you want to go out for a walk. Some emails coming on this. Nige in Sandbach, another government minister coming on your show without basic facts regarding the subject they've come on to talk about. Nigel says, living in Portugal, says, why don't the government pump their money into the British Legions? Well, there's also, we've just heard about SAFA, haven't we? And good luck to the work that SAFA does. Sean says, surely all the veterans need to do is throw their passport away and claim to be from abroad, I think you mean, and we'll give them a hotel room. Well, that was an idea, of course, we heard at the start. Let's go to other matters and this extraordinary story that neighbours on a badly potholed road say they'll be dead by the time it's resurfaced. Horsham Close, which is in Banbury, Oxfordshire, was last properly laid in 1983 and has had a series of patchwork repairs since. There's photographs in a couple of the newspapers. I'm looking at them in today's Daily Mirror. And these are big, chunky potholes. Homeowners have understandably complained and have been told the average wait is 103 years. That's coming from Oxfordshire County Council. Stuart is in Banbury. Stuart, are you the Stuart I can see a photograph of in the Daily Mirror?
I don't think so, unless they snapped it without we knowing.
Well, how funny, because the man who's giving the interview is Stuart, who lives in this area. But you live in the same area, do you, Stuart?
So I live up in Hillview, but I think generally over Banbury we've got a recurring issue.
Well, this place is Horsham Close. I don't know how close you are to Horsham Close, but that's where this Stuart is.
Yeah, I'm not sure how close I am, but my own car, I've got a damaged wheel on my own car, which is from a pothole that I hit down in town. That's going to cost me £400 to get a new wheel and a new tyre put on the car. So
is it an alloy? Special alloy wheel? Was it on the car or something?
It's a Mercedes wheel that I've got to get from them. So they won't do anything about it, Nick. You can notify the council, but they have strict rules on when they'll pay out for a pothole damaged vehicle.
What does a claim need to have to be successful?
So they say if they've seen the pothole and they're aware of it, they have X amount of time to repair it or completely fix it before they'll do a claim. If they're unaware of a pothole, they also won't pay out, because they say that they only do checks every 6 to 9 months on certain areas. So if they've not checked it, they'll just say, oh, well, we weren't aware of it because it's probably happened since our last check. Now, obviously, some of these potholes you can see, you know, from the images that you've got there and some of the ones that are around, that that it's not a pothole that's happened in 3 months. You know, this has been happening for 18, 24, 3-4 years, you know.
Have you or anybody, you know, ever explored the legal position here? Whether there is actually, if you had the time and the money and the patience, would it be worth going to a solicitor and actually trying to sue your local authority because they haven't patched up the road that you took your Mercedes down?
I think because the rules that they have, I suspect they're written, you know, and done over in law. I'm sure there's a law behind it all that says that they've got time, you know, they can't change something if they're not aware of it. I would assume that's probably jotted down in law somewhere and they're just following the law instead of actually being human beings about it, you know?
I don't know how you're going to do this, but can you give us an idea? How deep was the hole that did your wheel in?
Deep enough that it's dented the wheel. I've got a it's one of those where it's a bit of a jawbreaker, you know, you hit it. I suspect it was at least 2 inches, 3 inches deep,
right.
But it was vertical sides, you know. And I know, Nick, some of the ones down in town, there's raised ironworks on them, you know. That's just a puncture waiting to happen. And they just leave the raised ironwork, you know, the corner of that poking out, and you have to go down the junction and go all the way around it instead of actually taking the junction as it should be, you know, which upsets other road users because you're in the wrong place.
No, of course. Lastly, I've no idea why, but does anybody that you know in there, why are Oxfordshire County Council so bad at this? Why would they suggest to someone they wait 103 years?
Yeah, I've no idea. I mean, this is a on the side, Nick, but this is just the mentality. So for the last 6 months, they've been cutting the grass in our area, blowing all the grass chippings into the drains. And then in the last 2-3 weeks, they've been out twice to suck all the drains. And the first time was 12:45. They were out at 12:45 with their machines out there. So, you know, so it's like, well, we pay our council tax. They make these problems. And then you put your council tax up to pay for the problems they create. So
Stuart, thank you. You live very close to where this story is, and they've been told to wait 103 years. By the way, if you're a solicitor, if the council says, oh, sorry, we didn't see it on our last six-monthly inspection, or we'd only come out every 6 months, surely there has to be some kind of duty of care in the roads, and God knows we pay enough. If you're interested, give me a call, but we definitely know. Thank you again, Stuart. There's a turmoil at the BBC, so what needs to happen? In the first hour of the show, I spoke with former Conservative Culture Secretary Sir John Whittingdale. He said,
is not enough just to have two people leave their jobs and two new people to come in, because, you know, this will happen again, as has been shown over the recent months. So I think there needs to be more fundamental change.
Back to the BBC in crisis after this. 9.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. News time then, Lottie Morley.
The White House has welcomed the resignation of two of the BBC's most senior bosses. The Director General and Chief Executive of News have stepped down over criticism about a Panorama documentary on Donald Trump. Journalists are accused of editing the US President's speech on the night of the Capitol riots in a way that misled viewers. A deal aimed at ending the US government shutdown has passed the Senate. It's the first sign of progress after a 40-day deadlock that's affected domestic flights and food benefits for millions of Americans. And veterans across the UK are going to be offered support with health, housing and employment at local centres. £27 million of government funding is available, with extra help for service people at risk of homelessness. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK, but it should turn brighter later with highs of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
At TfL, we're helping make roads safer. We're continuing to roll out lower speed limits because 20 miles per hour roads have already seen 24% fewer collisions causing death or serious injury. We're also improving junctions to help keep you safe and improving visibility for our bus drivers with new wing mirror cameras. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Comparison of collisions data before and after implementation of 20 miles per hour speed limit.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. Holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
When you buy a BMW approved used electric car, there are no surprises. You'll find the largest range and the widest choice. Naturally, every car has been meticulously checked by qualified BMW technicians. Hardly a plot twist. And they always come with a battery health report and at least 12 months unlimited mileage BMW warranty. Just as you'd expect. BMW approved used electric cars. Nothing new here. Search BMW approved used electric. Obviously.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
It's called the Military Covenant, isn't it? These men and women are brave enough to potentially lay down their lives, certainly risk very serious life-altering injury, and I've not even touched on the emotional side of going to war, having to kill on our behalf for king and country. And the covenant is, when they come back, we'll look after you. Dates back decades. Not really working at the moment, I don't think, is it? But the government are trying to put it right in a sense with these network of hubs, Valor centres. But in reality, what would it achieve? Patrick's in Morden. What do you want to say to this, Patrick? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for listening to me this morning.
I'm afraid I can't listen to you, Patrick, because the line is so bad. So let's try and move you, because it's just clicking all the time. Brian's in Rayleigh. Brian, what do you take from the conversation I had about veterans? Good morning.
Well, I'm not exactly a veteran. I did 3 years. I wasn't a veteran. But I think what they should do is build villages, veterans' villages. And I know how we could fund it, and you'd like it, I think. We divert the money that goes to BBC to put towards building these villages.
Would all the vets want to live together? Isn't it nice that they live in the community and they're not... I don't want to be rude, but I would hate to live with a group of radio presenters. I would find it vile beyond all imagination.
Well, I think veterans, it's not quite the same as...
I know, but I just wonder, if someone's done 20 years, or even 10, isn't it quite healthy that they don't see vets all the time? I don't know, you tell me. You've served, I haven't. I don't know.
Well, I think the ones who really, the veterans, are real veterans. I mean, you've got the red coat guys, you know,
Chelsea pensioners.
I mean, they like being with each other. I mean, they don't have to actually live in each other's pockets, but they've got something in common. And I think we've got to do something. We can't have these guys on the streets.
Totally agree with you on that. That's supposedly Operation Fortitude. Actually, why don't I give that number out again? 0800 952 0774. If you are homeless military veteran. You had nowhere to sleep last night. You've nowhere to sleep tonight. Apparently ring that number and it will get resolved. That's what we were told. Brian, thank you for the idea. Let's see what others make of it. Patrick in Morden, hopefully on a stronger line. Let's try again. Patrick?
I most certainly hope so, Nick.
Yes, sir. Go ahead. I can hear you now.
So I work for Veterans Charity. I am a veteran and I also sit on a government veterans committee.
Right. Okay.
There's no doubt that Valour is well-intended and a good thing. I can't say which charity I'm working for because I'm going to be slightly critical of the government. Mm-hmm. Poor old Louise Sander-Jones, I think, has a lot on her plate at the moment, and probably her key concerns are retention and recruitment. Mm-hmm. So keeping her third remit front and centre is difficult. Very quickly, Armed Forces and Veterans Breakfast Clubs, yes, they're great, but as you had actually worked out, they are breakfast. And moreover, although they're up and down the country, they tend to be weekly or even fortnightly. So that wouldn't be the solution.
Oh, right.
We have also been here before. Royal British Legion set up a series of hubs about 14, 15 years ago. You may remember seeing some of them in larger towns and cities. For whatever reason, and it was that they worked very hard on it, it didn't work. What we do have at the moment is ASDIC, and that is the Association of Service Drop-In Centres, but it gets no support from the government. I think where the government may be getting this wrong is that there are a lot of resources out there. There are some charities, including the Legion and SAFA, doing incredibly good work, but the government is trying to set up something else. And I think it's better to invest in what already exists, including organisations such as the Veterans Advisory and Pensions Committee, which have been almost forgotten this last year, than taking a lot of money, public money, and they've already had a bad start to Valour. They tried to recruit someone to run it. It didn't work. And they're now having to go through that process all over again.
How tuned in to the needs of veterans do you think this government is and other governments have been, Patrick?
I'll be quite honest. I think this government is very clued in, and both the current minister and the previous minister, Al Carnes, when they've said they want to make a difference, are very sincere. The reality about other governments is that, yes, we've had the Armed Forces Covenant. There's a lot of pressure on trying to improve that. And I have to say that in the past, other governments, probably, it was more tokenistic. So there is a lot which could be done. And, of course, here's the most difficult thing. It takes money, and that's one thing this government, alas, does not have.
And everything we do is takes money. Good luck with the charity. I'm glad we got you back on a stronger line. You had such knowledge with all the different posts that you are involved in and the work that you're doing. Thank you for your input, Patrick. We'll return to that subject. But the biggest story of the day, with the greatest respect to our military veterans, has to be the fact that overnight, effectively, the BBC lost its boss and its head of news, or CEO news, and the director general. In the first hour of the show, I spoke with the former Conservative Culture Secretary, Sir John Whittingdale. He told me the BBC needs fundamental change.
It is not enough just to have two people leave their jobs and two new people to come in, because, you know, this will happen again, as has been shown over the recent months. It keeps happening. So I think there needs to be more fundamental change to reinforce the oversight of editorial standards. That may need more independent input. It may need a stronger standards committee. When I was doing the charter last time, we put impartiality to the top line of the mission of the BBC, and we gave Ofcom the power to regulate from outside. But that hasn't been enough. It hasn't achieved the changes that we wanted to see. And so we're now in a period of charter renewal once again. And so the government need to look at strengthening the editorial standards as part of charter renewal.
Lastly, this will add fuel to the debate, the flames that we should move to some kind of subscription model as regards funding. Where are you on that, Sir John?
Well, I think it's a separate debate. The question about funding of the BBC is a very live one, because every year fewer and fewer people are choosing to pay the licence fee, and the BBC's income is being affected. So the government has already started, and when I was media minister last, we began discussing alternatives. I think that in due course, an element of subscription is almost inevitable, because I want to see public service broadcasting continue, but the licence licence fee is becoming increasingly outdated and I don't think can be sustained in the long term.
So that was the former Conservative Culture Secretary in the first hour. In the last hour of the show, I spoke with Leader of Reform UK, Nigel Farage. He told me he'd spoken with President Trump on Friday about that Panorama documentary, which edited his speech from January 2021. And Farage said Mr. Trump, President Trump, was less than pleased.
Yeah, I did speak to Donald Trump on Friday, and to say that he was angry would be an understatement. As he said, I thought you guys were allies. And this was a state broadcaster. Absolutely appalling, but it's just the latest of a long list of political biases that we see running throughout the BBC. I've watched it for decades, whether it was their coverage of the European Union, their coverage of immigration, their coverage of climate change, their swallowing hook, line and sinker Hamas propaganda coming out of Gaza, and the sort of DEI agenda, the woke agenda, runs through not just news, but every cultural programme as well. And so you have to conclude that the BBC has been not just run, but staffed by the wrong people for way, way too long.
You mentioned your conversation with President Trump on Friday. Can you elaborate? Can you tell us a little bit more of what he said?
Well, I was just, you know, he was absolutely enraged. Enraged that the BBC had done this to him. I mean, you can scarcely believe it. I mean, he has been a critic of the BBC in the past. I mean, that is true. But he really thought this was the final straw. And frankly, you know, everyone talks about Russia meddling in elections. We hear that year after year after year. Well, what about the BBC? Their attempt to interfere in a presidential election just weeks before the vote. That's the point that really stuck in the craw.
The president has subsequently posted on social media about the two bosses going almost in a gleeful post. Should he be dancing on their graves, Mr. Farage?
Look, you know, you have deeply offended, the BBC have deeply offended the leader of the free world, an absolutely crucial ally, whether you like Trump or not, a crucial ally to this country, without whom we are effectively defenceless. I'm not surprised he's pleased.
That's Nigel Farage speaking within the previous now. Within the last few moments, one of the departing executives, CEO of BBC News, Deborah Turness, has been doorstepped, or as they say in Australia, doorstopped. I do think that's quite significant. Anyway, the BBC have doorstepped their own boss as she arrives for work at the BBC.
I stepped down over the weekend because the buck stops with me. But I'd like to make one thing very clear. BBC News is not institutionally biased. That's why it's the world's most trusted news provider.
Why did you fail to deal with the mistakes that were made?
And see my teams. Thank you so much.
Right, we're going now.
Do you think that the journalists are corrupt?
Of course our journalists aren't corrupt. Our journalists are hard-working people who strive for impartiality, and I will stand by their journalism.
Is there institutional bias at the BBC?
There is no institutional bias. Mistakes are made, but there's no institutional bias.
But why weren't the mistakes dealt with on Trump, on anti-Semitism, on women's rights?
I'm sure that story will emerge, but for now I'm going to go and see our team.
Do you think the board acted against you?
This way, Deborah.
Thank you.
On a point of order, Deborah Turness, these aren't mistakes. This was deliberate re-editing. There's a massive difference. God knows how many mistakes I've made in my journalistic career, but this was deliberate re-editing. You can't pass that off as a mistake. Ray's in Leighton Buzzard. Ray, talk to me about the BBC. What's your level of trust? Good morning.
Well, it's gone down considerably, Nick. I'm 80 on Friday.
Oh.
I brought up with very little radio and listened to the BBC News when I was a child. Loved the Oxbridge accents, etc., etc. And like a lot of people my age, hopefully I'm speaking for quite a few, is that we totally believed everything that we heard on BBC News until the last 20 years or so. And then tried to avoid woke. I would suggest that I suddenly became slightly curious about the way in which some news items were presented, and then thought, my God, this is being orchestrated, you know.
So I've been opposed to the BBC for years. I can't see the point of a licence fee. I hear exactly what you're saying. The affection that we have for it is that in my parents' lifetime, during the Second World War, this is the BBC broadcasting from London, and it's this huge significance. The moment it went for me was the Martin Bashir affair, where that so-called journalist lied to Princess Diana, who was an emotionally vulnerable woman. And that interview for me, that was where I saw how badly corrupt part of the BBC was.
Yes, let me just say, there's an awful lot that the BBC does that is very good for the country and is good value. But in terms of news and current affairs, I'm afraid they're slipping well behind. And I can understand that to a point, you know, for the last 20-odd years, we've had all new digital radio stations.
Yep.
We've now got the internet. And I'm sure they've been looking over their shoulders and been smitten by absolute fear.
And then when you're in fear, you take strange decisions, don't you? Ray, happy birthday. Thank you. Enjoy. Coming up, we'll return to our conversation about the BBC and also maybe get into that veterans, these idea of these valour centres as well. Just turned 9:46, LBC News headlines. Lottie Morley.
Two of the BBC's most senior bosses have resigned over criticism a Panorama documentary misled viewers. The US Senate has taken the first step to ending the longest government shutdown in history. And world leaders are meeting in Brazil near the Amazon rainforest for the latest COP summit. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK, brightening up later with highs of 15.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays on the M1 southbound from junction 10 at Luton Airport to 9 at Redbourne. It's following an accident where one lane is closed. It's also very busy on the M11 southbound from junction 7 at Harlow to the M25. And that's because of an accident and the road is partially blocked. Also in Essex, the A12 is closed northbound at junction 12 at Mount Nessing. And that's following an accident. Severe delays continue on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise from junction 8 at Reigate to 11 at Chertsey. There are delays of about an hour and it was after an accident that happened earlier. And also long delays on the A21 on the Tunbridge bypass southbound because of an oil spillage.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
A word to the wise, you won't be able to stay angry about this stupid Panorama edit if you actually go back to Donald Trump's speech. And income tax, it's going up, isn't it?
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
Chase is the digital bank that could boost your savings.
Ooh, tell me more.
When you join Chase, you could earn 4.5% AER variable. That includes a 2% AER fixed boost for 12 months on top of our standard saver rate.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Yep, our savings boost could help you reach your goals, like that once-in-a-lifetime adventure. Get our best easy access saver offer today. Search Chase Boosted Saver. Offer may be withdrawn at any time. 18 plus UK residents available to new current account customers for your first 31 days. Eligibility applies. 4.41% gross. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. This is LBC.
Train to Cambridge and then all aboard the paddleboards. A little bit different. Should be fun. Or wobbly. Or wet.
The wetsuit's a good look on you, Steve.
Oh, actually, this is very relaxed.
George is up the river cam without a paddle.
Train home, that was such a laugh. I think I might even have a new hobby. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story.
It's that time of year again, which can only mean one thing. Save a third off roasting joints at Waitrose. Choose from tender beef silverside, succulent whole brined and seasoned chicken, or juicy beach smoked gammon. So, fire up your ovens and give winter a warm welcome with a third off roasting joints. Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected lines and stores subject to availability. Prices may vary in Channel Islands, Little Waitrose and Partners and Concessions. Offer ends 11th of November.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet, she's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's continue our conversation with the BBC. That's what's really got you talking, although, of course, we will keep an eye on that veteran programme as well. Vincent's in Limerick. You're on the radio, Vincent. What are you going to tell us?
Good morning, Nick. Nice to be with you.
Good to have you on, sir. Good. Go ahead.
It's just a note of realism, really. Back in the real world, I'm speaking as probably a little bit like yourself, and indeed your previous guest, Leslie, an old-school print journalist.
Oh, right.
I'm retired after 30 years in an Irish daily newspaper, The Examiner, okay, and Echo, so we had a busy beat. But, no, I think just, again, it's probably frustrates me and a lot of old-school print journalists like me. Look, first of all, I would say in relation to the debate, did Trump say the things he said? Did he actually say them? Well, There's no doubt
about
that. He did say them. What we're hearing he said, to me, sounds very like incitement to violence.
No, hold on, sir. The BBC themselves admit it was a mistake. Well, they call it a mistake. They admit themselves it was a bad edit. So there's no debate about whether the edit was right or wrong. The BBC themselves say it was wrong. You can't say, tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing a murderer. Tomorrow I'm going to be interviewing a murderer. You can't edit that to be, tomorrow I'm going to be a murderer. That's the edit.
Of course, in terms of editing a newspaper interview or a radio interview or a television interview, of course, you've got to be, as you know and I know from our years of experience, you've got to be fair.
Yeah.
You've got to be you've got to be fair to your subject.
But, sir, they admit themselves it was wrong. They agree that it was wrong. The boss says, he calls it a mistake. I don't see it as a mistake.
I take the point, of course, Nick, but, I don't see it as a sackable offence or a resignation offence.
Well, possibly in and of itself, Vincent, but then when you throw in Bob Villain, Gary Lineker, Greg Wallace, Hamas and others, and we read a rather split newsroom, what's left?
Yeah, well, there is a long succession. I think there's no argument about that. Mm. But I'm just mindful of the fact that, I suppose, again, speaking as an old timer, I'm just mindful of the fact that in very, very long interviews, you've got to be fair.
You do.
But at the same time, the stick that will be beaten over your head, indeed, was beaten over all our heads many times.
Yep.
People believe in a free press and they agree in a free press.
Yep.
They promote a free press as long as it suits them, as long as it's favourable to them. Trump is our classic example of that. If it doesn't, it's a bit like an a la carte free press. If it's not favourable to you and you don't like it, therefore you'll be, beaten over the head with a stick.
I understand it, but what would be wrong would be to allow your views, whatever they might be, positive or negative, towards Donald Trump, to colour how you feel about this. It's a bigger story than that.
I agree. I agree with you, Nick. But just to finish my point, I think the most, common stick that will be beaten over the head of journalists and TV executives, you took it out of context. It was all taken. Now, that stick can be beaten on anybody. That can be used against pretty much any journalist, really.
Do stay in touch with your long news background. Always good to speak to a bloke. I think you probably enjoyed it almost as much as I am as well. Vincent, be well. Thank you. David's in Hampstead. David, what happens now to rebuild trust, as they say? That's going to be their mission. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Nick. Great show. And also, I have to say, really good job with that Labour MP. So I think the BBC, in short, the BBC needs to be hugely reduced, slash it in half, slash the remit, etc. If they are, as they say they are, the envy of the world and all this kind of stuff, they will rake in a fortune when they advertise. It will be so easy. And, the thing they've done here is a classic case of like Emperor's New Clothes. Essentially what they've done is they keep going, look, we're really impartial. Look how impartial we are. And everyone's going, no, look, you're not. And then when they get caught, they do this silly corporate waffle speak where they just say, decisions are made. It's the equivalent, Nick, is if you went and you burgled 50 houses and you get caught and you say, access and procurement decisions were made that I now regret.
Their crime also, David, I remind you, they knew about Michael Prescott's report in May.
They knew,
down to good old print journalism, the Daily Telegraph, that we've even seen it.
I mean, they knew about that. They knew about that Hamas guy's son in the documentary. They know about all these things. And it's really, really convenient that they could just turn around and say, listen, taxpayers, cough up your money. You've got no choice. But, you know, bad decisions were made and things were done. And again, in the I I speak to you fairly often, and I say this: these politicians and these people, they talk and they act in a way that people look at and just think, you're absolutely ridiculous. Take your blame, deal with the problem. And the BBC just needs to be reduced, I say, in half.
Well, yes, I think it's like the Home Office. So they need to be controlled. The parallels are quite clear, actually. They are too big, too wieldy, these organisations, to run properly. David, thanks for your kind words. Let's finish with a call on veterans, and I'm going to give you that number again. If you know what, if you are a veteran with nowhere to sleep tonight, if you know of one, 0800 952 0774, Operation Fortitude. But it was valour that the minister was talking about with his network of hubs. Chandra in Newcastle. Chandra, your comment on that. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I've heard this happen with numerous other cabinet ministers, especially when you're interviewing them and you're doing fact finding. If they knew the facts associated with the policy and they're simply refusing to answer, I would probably be relatively more happier than a situation where which I believe is happening here, is that they've had no contribution to the policy making itself. So this lady, Louise Sander Jones, who spoke this morning, I fear she has no contribution to the content of the policy which she was fronting this morning, and that's a more serious situation to be in.
But they're talking about spending £27 million of our money. I don't think it's unfair to ask, where's the money going? How much will each one cost? How many will we get for £27 million?
No, you treated her with respect, and you did not do anything which wouldn't be expected from a seasoned journalist like yourself. My worry is are all the policies being made by somebody who sits outside the cabinet, and the cabinet ministers are simply instructed to sort of present them and own them?
Yeah, it's an interesting point, because if that is the case, one, I suppose, has to afford her a bit of sympathy in that she's handed a brief last night on an email and said, right, you're on the round tomorrow talking about valor centres. And she knows, nothing about
them. I fear that's exactly what has happened here. Somebody who is not a cabinet minister, who works for the prime minister in some advisory capacity, is making up these policies, and the cabinet ministers sadly are having to bear the brunt of the media scorn. Really, I mean, media is not to be blamed. What you've done this morning, you conducted yourself in a dignified fashion. This is not an issue with you. It's to do with the fact that we don't know how this policy has come about.
And now we must watch to see if it gets implemented. Chandra, thank you. Have yourself a good day. Steve says there's an awful lot of veterans who are too poorly to work or too young to draw their state pension and rely on their military pension to live. If the budget affects veteran pensions, they won't pay. Lastly, Dom says, I think I've noticed a lot fewer people wearing poppies this year, sadly. Well, you have one day to put that right, don't you? You've got all of today and tomorrow, because of course it will be tomorrow. It's the 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month, when hopefully much of the country will come to a stop. But that's for tomorrow. I am done for today. If you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app, where you can stay up to date on the top stories and opinions, put your news counters in the order you want, pause and rewind live radio, and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's it. James O'Brien's waiting the other side of the news on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. I haven't really prepared much today because I'm putting my CV together to apply for the recently vacated job as Director General of the BBC. Nick, can I count on you for a reference? Thank you very much. There you go. It's a shoe-in. We should be over the line by tea time. It's one of those strange stories about which people in our world care very, very deeply, and people on the Clapham Omnibus care not a jot. But I can tell you who you shouldn't trust for insights into what is going on at the corporation. Anybody on the payroll of media organisations dedicated to the destruction of the BBC, best understood as the ones that billionaires have bought in order to try to influence the news agenda. So, bye-bye Rupert Murdoch, bye-bye Daily Mail, Daily Telegraph, and various other useful idiots who sail in them.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the chairman of the BBC is expected to apologise for the way a speech by Donald Trump was edited in a Panorama documentary. Director General Tim Davie has resigned following claims two clips were put together to show the president encouraging the US Capitol riots. Chief Executive of BBC News, Deborah Turnis, has also stepped down. She spoke to reporters this morning.
I stepped down over the weekend because the buck stops with me. But I'd like to make one thing very clear. BBC News is not institutionally biased. Our journalists are hard-working people who strive for impartiality, and I will stand by their journalism.
The White House has welcomed their resignations. New centres are being set up across the country to help veterans with healthcare, housing and jobs. £27 million of funding is being made available by the government. The Veterans Minister, Louise Santer-Jones, has set out the scheme.
One thing that I hear all the time from veterans is, I've got this problem, I'm not sure where to go, where can I go to get support? And what Valour is about addressing that. So it'll be a physical location where somebody can go in, have a cup of tea, talk about the issues that they're facing and be signposted to all the support that is out there to help them.
The longest government shutdown in American history could be coming to an end. Domestic flights have been affected and government workers have not been paid for the last 40 days. Democrats have agreed to support Republican plans, but there still needs to be another vote. The latest climate talks will get underway in Brazil this week as world leaders meet on the edge of the Amazon rainforest. Leaders from the world's biggest polluters, the US, China and India, won't be at the COP30 climate summit though. And an initiative from the Prince of Wales will join a charity set up by former Prime Minister Gordon Brown. The Homewards programme will collaborate with the Multibank to furnish 250 homes around the UK. It will initially operate across six flagship locations, including Aberdeen, Sheffield and Newport. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading up 76 points at 97.58. The pound buys $1.32 and €1.14. LBC weather, a cloudy start for most of the UK with some dry and bright spells later, feeling mild with highs of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Lottie Morley.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
All of us here today do not want to see our election victory stolen by emboldened radical left Democrats, which is what they're doing, and stolen by the fake news media. That's what they've done and what they're doing. We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved. Our country has had enough. We will not take it anymore. And that's what this is all about. And to use a favorite term that all of you people really came up with, we will stop the steal. Today I will lay out just some of the evidence proving that we won this election and we won it by a landslide. This was not a close election. You know, I say sometimes jokingly, but there's no joke about it. I've been in two elections. I won them both. And the second one, I won much bigger than the first. Okay.
And what are you going to do about it, Donnie?
As this enormous crowd shows, we have truth and justice on our side. We have a deep and enduring love for America in our hearts. We love our country. We have overwhelming pride in this great country, and we have it deep in our souls. Together, we are determined to defend and preserve government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Our brightest days are before us. Our greatest achievements still wait. I think one of our great achievements will be election security, because nobody until I came along had any idea how corrupt our elections were. And again, most people would stand there at 9 o'clock in the evening and say, I want to thank you very much. And they go off to some other life. But I said, something's wrong here. Something's really wrong. Can't have happened. And we fight. We fight like hell. And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
Don't take my word for it. Talk to the people who were, of course, convicted of insurrection in the aftermath, in the immediate aftermath of that speech, during which, of course, during the insurrection, Donald Trump failed signally to intervene, even as his own former vice president, Mike Pence, was subject to what can only be described as a bloodlust. There's still some decent journalists out there covering this kind of issue. And one of the organisations I'd point you to has looked at, count them, 210 defendants from 40 states and the District of Columbia who were charged for their participation in the January the 6th insurrection, all of whom have said in evidence that they were answering Donald Trump's calls when they travelled to Washington and joined the violent attack on the Capitol. So had it come to court, which it would have done had he not won the subsequent election, the 2024 election, the clips you heard involved him lying about the previous election, lying egregiously, shamelessly, lying through his teeth, lying obviously, lying violently, lying in ways that almost redefine the parameters of lying. Conduct so scandalous that it is almost as bad as splicing together two bits of a speech to make him sound even more belligerent than he did already. I clutch my pearls and shiver my timbers. I'll tell you how that happened shortly as well. But 210 defendants considered Trump their leader and believed they were following his lead by joining the insurrection. And the reason why I began with that clip this morning is to remind you why they believed that they were following Trump's lead and indeed joining an insurrection that he inspired and wanted and for which he would have been required to answer in court had he not won the 2024 election. He was impeached for it, but you need a two-thirds majority in the Senate for an impeachment to pass. And they didn't secure, although they secured a majority, they didn't secure a two-thirds majority. And then it's probably worth listening to the last bit, isn't it? Because it is with the fight like hell bit that this bit next was spliced together in an edit room for reasons that I think you have to be supremely dishonest to pretend not to understand. Was it a stupid thing to do? Yes. Was it done as part of a bias or through malevolence? Well, that's a position you can only sustain if you completely ignore what I just played you. And indeed, the entire speech in both tone and content is entirely at odds with this little snippet that follows. But what you do if you are preparing to, already signed up to, the lies that Donald Trump thrives upon and depends upon for political success and political survival is you completely ignore that. You either don't listen to the speech at all and pray that the people you're talking to or the people you're writing for don't listen to it either or don't go back to it either, or you claim that the obvious incitement to insurrection was somehow tempered or leavened by this little phrase here, this little minute of clip here, which is completely at odds with the entirety of the rest of the speech. This, by the way, is balanced journalism, going back to the source, not inviting onto the program somebody who is so far up Trump's bum that you can only see his toes, or somebody who was in line to be made Director General of the BBC by Boris Johnson, who, of course, was Prime Minister when the current Director General, the recently departed Director General, Tim Davie, was appointed. And indeed, of course, in Boris Johnson's Downing Street, Dominic Cummings held great sway, a man previously employed by a secretly funded think tank to chiefly dedicate all of his energies to calling for the BBC to be defunded. And of course, over at the BBC,